I've got 9:01. I'm going to call the Arizona State Board of Technical Registration meeting to order.
Just sign whatever contract you gave me.
And we will begin with roll call.
Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Here.
Jack Gilmore.
Here.
I did it.
Neil Jones. Jason Foose.
Here.
Jason Madison.
Here.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Here.
Stephen Knoll.
Here.
Andrew Everode.
Here.
Eugene Montgomery. We have a quorum.
Okay, we'll move on to the call to the public. Members of the public may address the board during this call to the public for no more than 3 minutes. Pursuant to ARS 38431-01H, the board members are not allowed to discuss or take legal action on matters raised during an open call to the public unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and legal action. However, members may ask staff to review a matter or may ask that a matter be placed on a future agenda. Is there anyone here that is not signed up to speak on a specific item that would like to address the board and call to the public? Hearing or seeing none, we will close the call to the public and we will move on to item 4, adoption of the minutes. Has everybody had a chance to read and review the minutes?
I'll make a motion to adopt the minutes from the last meeting, whatever it was. August 27th.
Second. We have a motion and a second to adopt August 27, 2019 board meeting minutes. Is there any further discussion on those or corrections, additions? Hearing nothing, I'll call for the question. All in favor of approving the August 27, 2019 board minutes, say aye.
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 Abstain.
Abstain.
Two abstentions.
Three abstains.
Three abstentions.
I was here.
So does that meet the quorum? Mm-hmm.
Four. Yeah, we have a quorum for the meeting and pass the majority vote.
Okay. Anyone opposed? Nobody opposed, so we will adopt the minutes as presented. Item 4B is discuss and consider whether to modify or approve the July 23rd, 2019 board minutes. And I don't know why that item's on there. Kirk, can you explain that? Or
we just received a letter from Mr. Helmut regarding his call to the public at that meeting, and he just made some notes that didn't quite capture what he was saying or was just not accurate, and he just asked that please look at it and maybe think about changing it. And, but he didn't say that you have to or anything, like he wasn't demanding about it. He just wanted to kind of pour our record.
Mr. Chair, I see if I'm reading things correctly, the minutes read that Mr. Hack opined that the Land Surveyor EAC members were incorrect in their findings and conclusions with regards to the cases in which Mr. Hack was a respondent. This is on page 18 of our packet. Sounds like he was only a respondent in one case, so it should say in the case where he was a respondent, or in regards to cases, and list the numbers out, because there were, I think he spoke about his case, but also a couple other cases that were on the docket. So I would be open to modifying the minutes to reflect that, say, instead of just general with regard to cases, just list the cases that you spoke about, because I think that's the only change that's needed.
Mr. And Donald, is there the opportunity for us just to leave the minutes as they are and attach these, his comments as a call to the public to the minutes?
The board could do it that way. Mr. Chair, it might be more difficult to do it that way just because a member of the public looking at the minutes online might not look at, refer to another document to see if there's a clarification of an issue in the minutes. But the minutes really are just a broad, generalized document There is audio posted. Anybody could refer to it if they want to listen to the meetings. The board is under no obligation to modify anything. If the board feels the minutes do not adequately represent the audio, they can make a minor alteration to them.
Well, my two cents on it is leave it alone. I don't know that we need to change it. It's on the recording. The recording is available. That's my two cents. I'll entertain any motion, though.
I'll make a motion to make a simple change, which is to change, you know, we talked about the cases where he was a respondent and dismiss the cases against him, just to change both of those to case. I think everything else is appropriate, but if you only respond, he was responding only one, it should say case. That would be my motion.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes.
Is this not being attached? Just standalone?
No, don't attach it. Just as case is the case.
Okay, so the next item on the agenda is item fives, which are scheduled for 9:30. So what we can do up to that time is move to item six and start down the enforcement cases. Is there anything that anybody sees that they could consent?
Is there anybody here for consent? Anything for the A's? Let's get people are here. Let's get.
We have a 6A4 here.
Okay.
So 6A1, 2, and 3 seem to just be a glitch in their computer, their website. I would suggest those would be an easy consent.
Yeah.
I mean, not easy. A consent grant.
Is that a motion?
Yes. I motion we consent 6A1, 2, and 3.
Is there a second?
I'll second that, Chair.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to consent 6A1, 2, and 3. Is that correct?
For dismissal, correct.
For dismissal.
For dismissal.
Yep.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes.
Mr. Chair, I move that we consent for dismissal cases 6A5 and 6A6.
I don't see 6A5 or 6A, I'm sorry, I do see 6A5 on my list.
Never mind.
We're up and clean and dismissed.
Should have been 6A6, though.
Maybe we can act on 6A6?
Yeah. Make a motion.
Okay. Well, I would move that we dismiss case 6A6. Gary Cornea, Home Inspector 40616.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes.
B1 and 2, is anybody here for those?
I have nothing on the list for 6B1 and 2. Is there anybody in the audience for 6B1 or 2? Robert Hill or Callahan Shea? Yes, sir.
Hey, I'm back on 685. Did that get dismissed?
No.
No, not yet.
Oh.
Okay.
Two. Anybody want to pull either one of those out?
6B1 and
not
2.
Me, man.
Okay. I'll make a motion. We consent 6B1 and 2 and issue letters of concern.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all
okay,
in.
Just one quick statement, maybe for the record, on 6B1. Yeah, but I let you consent. I think 6B1, this home inspector case is...
Are we gonna consent it or not? Do you want to talk about it or not?
No, I just want to make a quick comment. Is that okay?
Well, I mean, if we're going to consent it, we probably shouldn't talk about it. I mean, if there's discussion to be had, we should...
That's fine, and I don't need to talk about it.
Shut down.
I mean, if you have something to say, please do.
Mr. Chair, I apologize. I'm good.
Okay. I mean, I don't want to inhibit due process here.
That's fine.
Okay. All right, so we're good with 6B1 and 6B2?
Yes.
Mr. Winter? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes.
How about D1, 2, 3, and 4?
D3 is here.
Okay.
And 6D1 is here.
Okay.
Did we go overseas? Well, we want to discuss that.
Yeah, we'll discuss those. And I had a question about D4, so. Okay, well, I guess we're done with that. I guess we just need to
Can we take action on 6D2, Mr. Chair? This is Ward Isaacs on RA 62-175. And I would move to accept the signed consent agreement.
I'll second that, Chair.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Just to be clear, is there anybody here for 6D2 Ward Isaacson? Okay, hearing nothing and seeing nothing on the list. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Okay, I've got 9:12 right now for the time. And we can start in with the folks that are signed up on items. And our first non-5 item is
A4.
6D1. I'm sorry, that's a call-in. 6D3, Steve Barcelone?
Correct.
So 6D3. Okay, so the synopsis of this complaint is on January 29th, the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent's grading and drainage design plan for the property located at 8600 North Avenida del Sol in Paradise Valley, Arizona, on or about February 19th, fell below the standard of care for professional engineers. It did not consider adverse drainage impact on the existing adjacent property of the alleger. And the investigative conclusions were that the respondent violated board statute ARS 32128C4 as it relates to AAC R430-3016, and that the respondent failed to apply the appropriate technical knowledge and skill in the practice of a board-regulated profession when his grading and drainage calculations for 8600 North Avenida del Sol failed to contain the property's stormwater runoff. The staff recommendation was accept the respondent's signed consent agreement encompassing the following order: a letter of reprimand, administrative penalty in the amount of $1,000, and the cost of investigation in the amount of $855. The respondent is here. Mr. Bargalow, would you please care to explain why you're here?
Just going to do my best to make amends with the agreements I had with the board the prior meeting. Since that time, I think I've done exactly what we discussed in that meeting. I've reached out to both the town engineer and the property I worked on. They actually are now on board with allowing me to do some remediation work to the driveway. Thanks to the weather and some busy schedules the last couple of days, I haven't completed the field survey of that yet, but field survey is in process, going to get a design put together to contain what is the issue here, which is water getting off the driveway into that cul-de-sac. Hopefully, I would think end of this week, middle of next week, I'll have a design of the town engineer. He's going to sit down, look at it with me. We'll get that thing approved pretty quickly. I already have contractors lined up to put this into action. Hopefully, within the month, we have a drainage system included that prevents water from exiting that lot anywhere along the front and keeps it on site in the basins that are there to contain that water. Just want to make sure the board's aware. I'm trying to remedy to the best of my ability what's going on there.
Okay, we appreciate that. Is there any action for us as a board here?
We just have to accept it.
We have complainants here.
We do have the alleges.
There are alleges.
Okay.
These are the Peshkins.
Okay.
Larry.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, board members, and ETR staff. I have only a few comments to make at this time. However, if during the course of this hearing anyone has any questions for me or my wife, Phyllis, we will certainly do our best to answer them. I would like to express my appreciation to the Board of Technical Registration for accepting our complaint, to the Enforcement Advisory Committee for its evaluation, and now for this opportunity to appear before the board. We would also like to thank the board investigator assigned to our complaint, Mr. Sean Thacker, for all of his time and effort in investigating our complaint. It is our understanding that following the findings and conclusions of the EAC panel, the registrant, Mr. Bargalow, agreed to sign a consent order as it relates to the engineering deficiencies in the grading and drainage plan he designed for the adjacent property. Phyllis and I would like the board to know that we appreciate the fact that Mr. Bargalow has apparently accepted responsibility for the engineering deficiencies in the grading and drainage design which ultimately caused flooding to our home. My wife and I have been dealing with this now for over 6 years. During that time period, all of our efforts to try to obtain some acknowledgement of these engineering deficiencies and code violations from the town of Paradise Valley and our elected officials have been in vain. Candidly, the Board of Technical Registration was our last resort. Cognizant of the board's objective to provide for the public safety, health, and welfare, Phyllis and I believe that objective will be fulfilled if the board agrees to accept the consent order signed by Mr. Bargalow. Your acceptance of the consent order will support us with regard to the neighbors' threatened litigation against us and enable us to move forward in a collaborative effort with Mr. Bargalow, the town, and others to recognize and resolve the continuing threat of flooding and other adverse impact to our property as cited in our complaint. Thank you for your consideration in bringing this matter to closure with the board.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Chair, based on the signed consent agreement and Mr. Peshkin's statements, I move that we accept the signed consent agreement.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. There is another person here that signed up to speak. Mark, is it Waller? Is it Mark Waller? Is that correct?
Walker, sir.
Walker. Are you here to speak on this case?
No, just to listen in.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so we can proceed with any further discussion.
I just have a quick comment for Mr. Bargalow to, you know, let you know that we appreciate, you know, you actually did the right thing and correcting the deficiencies. I think it's, you know, it's difficult to do that, but you do the right thing. So thank you. I'm
trying to.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other comments?
Did we have a second?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes.
Gentlemen, Phyllis, the Peshkins, she'd like to say something to the board.
Please do.
Okay.
Yeah, please do.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, board members, and ETR staff. I just want to take this opportunity to express my appreciation for your consideration, investigation, and recognition
of the validity of our complaint. Your commitment to provide for the public safety, health, and welfare by requiring registrants to adhere to their standard of care is crucial. There is so much redevelopment happening in older neighborhoods that I want to emphasize the importance that registrants must consider any adverse impact their design might have on existing adjacent properties, just as we have mentioned or recited in our complaint. So we are grateful and relieved to have your hearing completed. And now, due to your action today, we can move forward with your findings. Thank you again for your dedicated service and professional evaluation of our situation. And I recall the last meeting that you had considered or were going to send a letter to Payson, the city of Payson. And I was just curious, I know this isn't in your purview, if you could remind the municipality, or the town of Paradise Valley, if they could enforce their codes to protect their citizens and to evaluate and not enforce codes that are going to harm their residents. So that's just a request. I know that's not your purview, but like Larry mentioned, this has been going on since 2013, before there was a neighbor. So thank you so much again, and thank you for your education. And also, I don't know if you recognize as a public, the camaraderie here is so genuine. You are, even though you're all professionals, and you agree and disagree, you can still come together. And it's just so obvious how you're so committed, everyone, staff, board members. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anything further on this case? Okay. Thank you, folks.
Thank you.
Okay, I have 9:23, and the next person signed up is 6A4, Ryan Roberts.
Which one did we jump to?
6A4. This is case number B20003. 6A4. Mr. Roberts, are you the alleger in this case?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Let me read through this real quick here. The synopsis of the complaint is on July 12th, the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent firm displayed aerial photographs depicting property boundary lines and advertised property line identification on the respondent firm website through social media, providing professional services as a land surveyor without benefit of board registration. Staff recommendation is the complaint against the respondent be dismissed. I don't see the alleger here. The respondent. Is the respondent here? Okay, so Mr. Roberts, you have the floor.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for my opportunity to be here. The complaint was made just due to the lack of understanding on my part of where the line is drawn as far as marking property boundaries, and when I sent an email to the board, they said the only way to really get it answered was to file a complaint. So here we are with the complaint. Essentially, looking through not only the social media advertisements of marking property boundaries on photographs, but also on his website advertising two-dimensional, three-dimensional mapping for real estate and land development. As far as the definitions go of land surveying practice, I feel as though those fall under a couple of them. the measurement of land to determine the position of any monument or reference point that marks property line boundaries or corners of the proposed adjournment or corner for the purpose of determining the area of descriptive or description of land. Although, you know, just marking the property boundaries on the photos, it's still representing, you know, reference points on those photos. I feel as though that falls under that. I would like to know if it doesn't. And then as far as the two-dimensional, three-dimensional mapping as advertised on his website, I feel like it falls under the 22D measurement by angles, distance, elevation of natural or artificial features in the air, on the surface, and the immediate subsurface of the earth within underground workings and on the surface or within the bodies of water for the purpose of determining or establishing their location, size, shape, topography, grades, contours, or water surface depths for the preparation of the field notes and maps depicting such features. I don't know how you do a two-dimensional or three-dimensional map without measuring the land to determine the height, the grades, such of said land or piles of dirt or whatever for land development or real estate or even agriculture. I feel like by him marking property boundaries and the two-dimensional mapping and three-dimensional mapping as advertised on the website absolutely falls under land survey services. I talked to Andrew. He doesn't represent himself as a surveyor, but in my opinion, has three services that he provides on a regular basis that would fall under the definition of land surveying practice. So more than anything, I don't necessarily want people, you know, to get in trouble, get fined, everything else, but I mean, the clarification I feel like needs to be made, not just for Andrew and Quality, but I mean, there's so many drone companies out there right now doing the exact same thing, taking pictures, marking property boundaries, which does get provided to a client and has the same impact as a survey map. You know, for us to do the same thing with a level of accuracy and reliability, the cost is extraordinary because we have to use...
Who do you mean by us?
Huh?
Who do you mean by us?
Us as in me? Or anybody?
Surveyors.
Any
are you a surveyor?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes, were you impacted by this? I mean, was this?
I mean, we get impacted by these type of things on, you know, people offering topography surveys pretty much by doing a drone flight, putting everything through drone deploy. You know, they pay $400 and they charge the client $600, you know, and they produce a map that's inaccurate. And for us to make the same product, but us held to a standard of accuracy, it is impacting. And then as far as marking the property boundaries on pictures, I mean, I feel like, you know, this state, when it said we need surveyors to be at standard, and we need, you know, people that are marking boundaries to uphold certain standards, like, now we have another element that probably wasn't thought about at the time that is representing the property boundaries to a client. They're holding a picture saying, oh, see, I own the tree, or my fence is on my property. All the things that, as a surveyor, we're called to represent on a regular basis. And this is just inaccurate and, you know, for the client, represents a property line that could be wrong or could be close. We don't know, you know.
So, Mr. Roberts, if you were to provide this service, would you have to seal it?
If every topo we do, we provide two things usually. We stamp and seal everything that we release as far as a topo survey. But then, you know, most engineers, everything like that, want the digital so they can do their design based on that. So we produce both always. So. Yeah.
So the services provided here, would that be something that if you were requested to do this, you would seal it?
Yeah, we've done stuff similar and we've sealed it, yes.
Okay. I'm looking at the case here, members of the board, and I see one case assessment. I don't see an EAC. I don't see two case assessments. I'd offer this recommendation that we go back and run this through an EAC.
So I have a question, because I think there's two issues here. I mean, one is the bigger policy issue of drones and how to deal with drones, which I think is part of what your question was.
Yeah.
I think the other issue, specifically this respondent in this case, the information that came with the board packet, the only thing I see is some oblique photos with some red lines drawn on it. I wish it had a disclaimer that said these are not, you know, survey lines, but it doesn't show any measurements, so I don't know how you could say that they're measuring land and, you know what I'm saying? And I'm not trying to... If this had dimensions, for instance, I would be troubled by it, but the fact that it just shows, you know, some red lines, it indicates to whoever's using it that they need to get something else, you know, to know where these things fall on surface.
Right. Well, in the letter from the respondent, he does say he adds a disclaimer that map and parcel information is believed to be accurate, but accuracy is not guaranteed. No portion of the information should be considered to be or used as a legal document. Users should independently research, investigate, and verify all information.
I haven't seen that
so
in any of the advertisements.
Yeah.
But that might be what he provides to his clients. You know, it might not be on the realtor's website, you know, but if it's provided to his clients and he is actually providing that.
And that's just a part of it. I mean, the two-dimensional and three-dimensional mapping for real estate land development, I don't know how anybody could say that's not any kind of measurement. If you have two-dimensional and three-dimensional dimensions, would indicate measurement.
Right, but that's not part of this case.
We didn't have it in the packet, though. If he's doing that, we didn't have a project where he did that.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I sent it later. They said if you have any more evidence, and I did send that later. I don't know if you guys have a copy of that, but...
I mean, if there is more evidence, I would think it would be appropriate to send it to an EAC for review. If it's based on what we're having in front of us right now, I don't think we would take action.
No, but I mean, I can't see anybody that would, you know, like you said, there's no dimensions or anything on this, legitimately thinking that this is a survey. I mean, it's a general, you know, here's the real estate, here's the land. You know.
I mean, in the field, we run into stuff like this all the time, and, you know, people don't necessarily need to see a survey. They tell me, you know, my real estate agent said I owned this property corner, which will be just a goat stake, you know. Or, you know, like, I was looking on the county website, and my neighbor's fence is on my property. Like, everything, it still represents a property boundary and is advertised as such. I mean, without the dimensions, it's still the property boundary, in my opinion. And I don't know how, I mean, maybe it just needs to be clarified.
I think clarification would help, but it's, you just mentioned GIS. I mean, what are we going to do about GIS? Those are not accurate boundaries. They're not survey boundaries either.
No, but you usually have to click a disclaimer before you even enter it.
I think clarity is a good thing. But... I don't know. If there's more evidence with dimensions, I think we should go to an EAC. If what you provided has dimensions, I think we should.
Three-dimensional and two-dimensional mapping posted on its website is reading.
Okay, but you don't have any products that they prepare where they show, where they provided a client.
Oh, I've never hired them, no.
Okay.
It's sure. An interesting problem.
It's pretty common for the county assessor's maps to be used as a basis of reference, because most of those county assessor's maps do show dimensions. Where it comes from, I have no idea, but it is on the county's website. If you look up a particular parcel, mm-hmm. It's a basis of reference for starting preliminary work.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a basis of reference for anything detail or going into construction.
Most of those dimensions on the GIS website coincide with legal descriptions and maps and plats.
But in this case, if I saw those dimensions on this aerial and aligned with the county assessor's map, I don't know that I could say there's a fault there, because that information is readily available. It's a gray line, it's a gray area. I mean, it's kind of a fine line to some degree, but it all depends on how it's being used and what disclaimers go along with it.
See, and that's the problem that I see is, you know, people are, I mean, it's advertised all over Facebook, and he's not the only one, and I have nothing against Andrew, but it's representing, you know, this is the land you're buying, you know. I mean, to me, it's the same as a real estate agent just tying the pink flagging on the fence corner, which happens on a regular basis, but to me, it is representing a boundary line and an ownership line, and I don't know where the line should be drawn, but yeah, I mean, it is a level of concern going forward.
Mr. Chair, can I make a suggestion? What if we ask staff to contact the respondent and obtain samples of his 2D and 3D mapping for our review? And then pass that on to an EAC to assess, or to assessors to assess.
I think that would have to be an open, a separate case. I mean, this case is, it seems to be for this one thing, and the 2D and 3D mapping isn't on that. If you want to direct staff to open another case against him, like, you can do that, but I think, you know, those have to come from the public.
But I think he, but his complaint was that he provided this 2D and 3D mapping. The only example he provided was this one, but it's about the broader service, not this one. He didn't reference any specific property as being the issue. It was about the services that were being offered.
And if there's a disclaimer on his website that says that this is just for information only, or it's not accurate and you should do your own independent?
I don't see in...
That's why I think this EAC should weigh on. If they see the products and they're satisfied that there's clear disclaimers and that, you know, I have no problem dismissing, but we don't know what those products look like.
I kind of wonder, though, I mean, it doesn't say in the statute that if it was inaccurate, then it's, you know, the definition of surveying doesn't speak to the accuracy of your work, so.
I think we have two really different issues, because the thing you see on Facebook, I mean, how's that different than a giant arrow pointing at where the property is? I mean,
a giant arrow doesn't have corners.
Yeah, but it's
I feel that is taking public information and doing an artistic representation, especially if he has a disclaimer. The 2D, 3D, I see contractors getting into all the time, whether it's before an interview or something where they're talking about this, and I think that's a way bigger... I agree there's probably a big discussion to be had, and I think it's far more on that than me going in PowerPoint and giving an approximate...
Yeah, it's like somebody throwing a house on a lot and saying you designed a house.
Yeah, so I think we have two very different issues, and I think the 2D, 3D mapping, I would love to hear what better experts than I have to say about that.
So focusing on McQuality Design Services, LLC, on page 1108, I want to draw everybody's attention to this statement. For all of your aerial photography needs, we only charge $89.99 for 7/11 aerial photos and $119.99 if you want the property lines to be identified in the photos. He's offering a service to identify property lines. That's pretty clear by that statement to me. So, again, I would offer the suggestion of kicking this back to an EAC.
And I don't think we need to take action to do that, do we?
And then we can obtain the additional
information. I would request additional information and then pass everything to the EAC.
Well, I think that's the purpose of the EAC. That's why I'm pointing to the EAC. So,
okay. What is the definition of the EAC?
Enforcement Advisory Committee. Oh. It's a panel of peers and licensed surveyors that will look at this.
Okay.
I believe that's something that you as the respondent would be invited to.
As the alleger.
And by the way, thank you for, you know, bringing this to our attention, because I think it's a bigger question.
I think maybe it would have probably been a call to the public next time instead of
I did have a question, because I think you asked to remain anonymous in your complaint.
Yeah.
Is there a reason?
Well, he's already threatened me with...
Yes, I'm just wondering why we as the board did not keep the complaint anonymous if you requested it.
I don't think... I can understand why.
We can't keep complaints anonymous?
The board can't accept anonymous complaints.
In 8 years of the board, that's the first time I hear that.
Yeah.
There are certain...
If we know who it is, and if it comes to us with a complaint anonymous, then we can do that.
If the board has something that has a name attached to it, the problem is this is a meeting with public records. The board has a document that has a name on it. We can't withhold the name because we're trying to keep somebody...
1108.
If the board received a tip that was truly anonymous, then the board may act upon it without...
I suggest that we make it clear when people are filing complaints or wherever in our website we have room for complaints to say, if you wish to file an anonymous complaint, please, you know, or if you file a complaint through here, please be aware that your name will be shared. If you want to do an anonymous complaint, please send an anonymous letter or whatever it is to the board. Because I think, I know that seems ridiculous, but I think it's worse for, you know, the alleger's when they want to remain anonymous, not to be able to.
Yeah, I mean, me staying anonymous, the only purpose of that was because of what I've heard about Mr. McQuality outside on other issues, and he has threatened me with actions and stuff going forward. So I don't know. Yeah.
Well, thank you, though.
And just for future board policy topics, if you wanted to talk about how to deal with drones or the issues of 2D and 3D mapping, we can certainly agendize time for that at a later board meeting. And you would obviously be able to come and have input in on those bigger issues.
Yeah, I looked online. I was hoping to get a previous, I don't know if this has come up previous, but there's a lot of this out there. And there's no clarification. It's not called for in any of the state statutes that are older than the drone epidemic. So that's, either way you guys vote, I respect that and I appreciate your time. And then any further rulings will I be notified?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Roberts. So the action is to defer it back to investigation staff.
And I think bringing drones up at a future meeting is appropriate, whether it's to a committee or to the board, Melissa.
Yep.
I would ask if you can to send a question to other boards and see what they're doing about drones.
Okay.
They may not answer, but...
I would also like to point out in the spring of 2019, the newsletter, there was a little blur because it was before that on our committee.
You already have a policy as well.
You do?
Yep.
What does the poor policy say? That's what I'm saying.
I think I would have it there. Can you pull it up? I don't know that I printed a copy of it out, but I know it's there. That it,
a substantive policy statement?
Yeah. It stated that the drone is merely a tool and
we don't regulate tools.
Right.
That's what
it takes. Right. No rules for tools.
So, getting back to the agenda here, I think we're done with this case, and any further discussion would be something for a future agenda.
Yes.
I see that the state's here, and I'd like to move on to 5A if everybody's good. We're closing out 6A4.
Did this thing?
No. We didn't want to follow the statement, but it was cool.
How could we have forgotten something so petty?
Okay, we are on to item 5A1. This is the matter of Victor Johnson Jr., aka Victor Johnson, non-registrant. And we will proceed with our hearing, and the time is 9:45. This is the time set for consideration of the administrative law judge's recommended decision in case number 19A, the unlicensed activities complaint BTR. The respondent, Victor Johnson Jr. The matter regarding Victor Johnson Jr. Are the parties present?
Stop on one half and see.
Is Mr. Johnson Jr. here? Okay. As a preliminary matter, I will ask that all board members indicate that they have received and reviewed the administrative law judge decision and the record in this matter. And I am told board members here.
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Here.
Jack Gilmore?
Yes.
Jason Foos?
Yes.
Jason Madison?
Yes.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Yes.
Stephen Knoll?
Yes.
Andrew Everode?
Yes.
Everyone has reviewed.
Yes. Okay. The board will now hear a brief oral argument from the parties on the ALJ's recommended decision. Please understand that this is not the time for you to re-argue the merits of your case. Please focus on the recommended outcome and any errors you believe are contained in the recommended decision. Each party will have 5 minutes. Since the state has the burden of proof in this matter, it shall go first and be allowed to save some of its time for a brief rebuttal, and then we will hear from the respondent. Let's begin with the state's argument.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, because this is a license denial, just a reminder that the burden is with the applicant and not the state in these matters.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. I will be very brief, as the board has reviewed the materials and the hearing record in this case. I would ask that the board adopt the findings of fact and conclusions of law as set out by the administrative law judge in this case, and adopt the recommended order. The judge was very candid in her findings, to the degree of making a statement that I don't believe I've seen a judge make before. If I may quote, it does not appear on this record that the respondent understands the concept of regulation or that he is capable of being regulated. I believe that very well sums up the entirety of the proceedings thus far with regards to Mr. Johnson and Justice Satellite in this case. So at this time, again, I would ask that the board adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law, and the recommended order in this case.
Thank you, Mr. Donald. And of course, the respondent is not present, and Mr. Donald, I guess we'll forego any rebuttals and move on to the findings of fact. I'm looking for a motion to adopt the findings of fact or modify or reject.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the findings of facts. Okay. As drafted by the judge.
I will second that.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. Motion passes. I'm looking for a motion to adopt, modify, or reject the conclusions of law.
Mr. Chair, I move we adopt the conclusions of law from ALJ decision.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to adopt conclusions of law. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor of adopting the conclusions of law?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. Motion passes. The final issue for discussion is the board's order. Now is the time for the board to make a motion and deliberate. So we are looking at, I'm looking for a motion that would uh, that would accept
the order.
The order. Thank you.
I move we accept the order.
We have a motion.
Second, Chair.
And a second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. Motion passes. This concludes the matter before this board. The board's decision will be reduced to writing and sent out to the party shortly. Further appeal rights on the board's decision will be set forth in writing in the order. Thank you all for attending today. That's it. That's the conclusion.
Yeah, we still got to do 5B, though.
It's for you.
Okay.
Same parties.
Don't worry, there's only...
Same bat time, same bat chin.
Mm-hmm. Okay, am I correct with 5B that it's a motion to deem? Thank you, Mr. Wright.
I do believe that Mr. Bauer may be here.
Okay, so according to the sign-in sheet, we do have a call-in, three call-ins, and someone is present for 5B1. The call-ins are for 5D1. So. So we will go to case 5B1 since, is that okay, Ms. Wright?
Absolutely.
Okay. Let's move to 5B1. Christopher Bothner. Okay. And this is 5B1. It's case number AL14009. It is a motion to deem allegations admitted. This is the time, date, and place where the matter dealing with case number AL14009 is scheduled to be heard by the State Board of Technical Registration. Will the parties please identify themselves? First the state, then the respondent.
Deanie Ray, appearing for the state.
Christopher Bauer.
Thank you. The state filed a motion for the board to deem allegations in the complaint notice of hearing as admitted. If granted, the board will treat all allegations in the complaint and notice of hearing as true and move directly to a determination of what discipline is appropriate in light of the violations. The state will present a brief statement to the board about its request, and then the respondent can address the board. Please address your remarks to the issue of whether you received the complaint and notice of hearing and why you did not timely file an answer as required by the board statutes and rules. The state makes its presentation.
Thank you, Chairman and members of the board. At the time I filed this, obviously we had not heard from Mr. Bauer, but he did call me yesterday and we had a fairly long discussion about this case and what his alternatives are, and I don't know what his decision is at this time, but I would leave it to the board whether or not to grant the motion to deem. He may or may not concede that the motion to deem is appropriate, so I think you need to ask him that.
Is there anything you'd like to add to that, Ms. Ray?
No, not
okay.
Until you hear from Mr. Bauer.
Okay. Mr. Bauer, this would be your time to make a presentation to the board.
Well, first I wanted to apologize for not replying to the notifications of the complaint. But I was in Maryland taking care of my mother, helping taking care of her. And I didn't know about the notice, my daughter told me. But quite frankly, with everything going on, I forgot and just didn't make a written reply. And so I apologize for that.
Anything to add, sir?
Well, the complaint is, it happened. I can't deny it. I thought he was licensed. He told me he was licensed. He was supposed to give me a copy. It just never happened. He worked with me for 3 months, and it never happened. So I can't say anything other than it's true. I did not know he wasn't licensed, and I never got the proof that he was.
Thank you. Is this an appropriate time to open up the floor for questions?
Certainly.
Okay. Anybody from the board care to ask any questions?
Well, I just have, I mean, it's got this far, but obviously it's kind of bypassed because nothing was solved earlier, so kind of bypassed all that stuff because we didn't have the respondent was, available or, responding to the thing. Can we just go back and do a consent agreement can we jump back and just do a consent agreement and just kind of, or do we have to go to hearing now on this?
Well, I think we can deny the motion to deem, is that correct?
I'm not sure that he wants you to deny the motion to deem.
Okay.
I mean, I think I was expecting him to, state it however, whatever he wants to do. I can't speak for Mr. Bowther. But I understood that he was willing to let the motion to deem go forward and then argue for leniency from the board. That was my understanding of what he wanted to do. But I can't speak for him. So, I think if you stop this and go back to do a consent agreement, you may be just wasting everybody's time because I think you can get to where you need to get, depending on what Mr. Bowther wants to do. But I don't think he's asking you to deny the motion to deem.
So, Mr. Bowther, what are you asking of this board?
What she said is absolutely correct. I'm just asking for the agreement. I've never had any issues in the past. This is just a bad oversight on my part.
Maybe it's easier to accept the motion to deem in the sense that all the statutory requirements were met anyway. So, if we start granting exceptions to that now, how are we going to deal with other cases? So I think we could accept the motion to deem, and then, in recognition that he's here, he showed up, he's owning up to it, work on the leniency side of things, on the penalty.
Oh, so we do have the original penalty.
Seems reasonable.
So it's my position dependent, since Mr. Gottner stated what he stated, that he should accept the motion to deem and then move on to the penalty phase of this.
And the original consent agreement is in here. It's on page 118, so.
Mr. Gottner, do you have anything further to add?
No, I do not.
Ms. Ray, do you have anything further to add?
I do have something to add, and that is that the original consent agreement had a factual inaccuracy in it. And I don't know if that had something to do with why Mr. Bowther didn't accept it. But the only issue in this is that he hired and used somebody that was not licensed. So I want to make it clear that the actions of the third party that came in and double sold and double billed this lady that caused this complaint to arise is not attributable to Mr. Bowder. So really the only thing we're here for is that he hired somebody who represented that he was licensed and really wasn't. And so I think that's what you're dealing with today.
Okay. At this time, I think we'll move on to motions. The board will deliberate and rule on the state's motion. We can begin with general discussion and move to motions. The first motion will be to determine whether to grant the state's motion to deem or the allegations admitted. So I'm looking for a motion.
Chair, I move that we accept the state's motions to deem the allegations admitted.
Second that, Chair.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. Motion passes. The board has deemed the allegations in the complaint notice of hearing is admitted. Is there a motion to adopt the factual allegations and the alleged violations from the complaint and notice of hearing and findings of fact and conclusions of law?
I'll move what you just said.
Was there a specific item that you wanted us to
I'm thinking page 79, like 11 and 12 were about double billing, so we might want, if I'm understanding you correctly, we might want to pare back the findings on our lawyer's recommendation,
and I think
the state's recommendation.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I think if you take a look at the motion to deem, the only allegation related to violations would be 232.128(c)(3). Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct.
So it would be just finding that violation.
Okay. So I think what Ms. Wyckoff said is correct, that it would be striking 11 and 12 of factual allegations.
Mr. Kramer, do you have something to add?
Yes, sir. In the original consent agreement, in the conclusion of law, the only allegation, the only statute that was cited was the 128(c)(3). So I'm a little confused on where there's a double violation here that we're talking about. There's only one listed in the consent agreement.
Can I be heard on that? Mm-hmm.
Yes, please.
11 and 12 are not there as purposes. That was not an allegation against Mr. Boucher. That was really just background information. It wasn't alleged as a violation that he did something wrong there. It's just something that caused the complaint to be, he didn't create the double billing situation at all.
Right.
So if it's background, do we need to strike it? I'm just trying to get our paperwork in an order.
Probably don't need to strike it, maybe Mr. Harris has to do it.
I feel like the confusion might be that she's referring to a complaint notice of hearing prior, and that this new complaint notice of hearing, this new motion deemed, has already been corrected. Would that be,
yeah.
We didn't say it, what you're talking about, is the past violation.
The only thing that we need to correct is that original consent agreement had the roles reversed. And we do not have the roles reversed in the complaint, nor do we have them reversed in the motion.
Okay. We're not using the consent agreement at this point since we are...
Correct.
Okay.
We're starting again. Okay.
So,
can I second that we adopt the factual allegations then? Based on that information?
Yeah, I think we did that, though. In the prior motion was to deem the factual allegations accepted. Is that not correct?
Yeah, we...
Yes.
Yeah.
So the motion on the floor is I move the board adopt factual allegations and the allegations of unprofessional conduct from the complaint and notice of hearing as findings of fact and conclusion of law.
Okay. So in taking a look at it, we're looking at page 79, paragraphs 9 through 17, which continue on page 80. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes.
So we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion on that item? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none. Motion passes. Final issue for determination is the appropriate discipline based on findings of fact and conclusions of law we have adopted. We will allow the parties to briefly address the issue, first the state, then the respondent. The state presentation.
I would defer to the board on this. I mean, I think that Mr. Gottner has shown some good faith in coming in today. Your options are up to $2,000 penalty, and there's other options that you may have. I don't know that Mr. Gottner has had any other issues with the board since then. This is a bit dated, this case, so I think you could take that into account as well. And I think he can speak for himself as to what he is and he deserves or doesn't deserve.
Thank you, Mr. Wright. Mr. Boutner?
Yeah, I have been in this industry, the security alarm industry, between Maryland and here for over 25 years. And this is the first time I've ever had any situation like this where I had to go before anybody for anything. And, all I can do is apologize for the oversight of never getting a copy of that license. It never happened again. It never will happen again. And I just ask for the understanding of that and the understanding of why it didn't apply. And just ask for the best leniency that you possibly can give.
Thank you, sir. We will now deliberate on the appropriate discipline to be imposed. The board may consider the following actions pursuant to ARS 36446.07. Issue a letter of reprimand, impose probation requirements that are best adapted to protect the public, health, safety, welfare, and that may include a requirement for restitution payments. Impose peer review and professional education requirements, impose restrictions on the scope of the respondent's practice, impose administrative penalty in the amount of not more than $2,000 for each violation on the board statutes and rules, suspension for a period of not more than 3 years, or revocation. So I'm looking for a motion and discussion.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a couple of questions of the respondent?
Please do.
So, Mr. Boutner, I appreciate being here today. I understand why you didn't respond to the complaint notice of hearing. I'm wondering why you didn't respond or didn't act on the consent agreement, because what troubles me, this case is 5 years old. I mean, this came to the board in 2014, and we're sitting here in 2019, so you were in Maryland for a bit. This year you couldn't answer it, but why didn't you answer the prior 4.5 years?
To be quite honest, I don't remember ever getting anything concerning this. I remember talking to the Attorney General's office on these matters. Cooperated with, because this gentleman did a lot of things with other companies that came out, and I gave all the information that they ever requested of me. I personally don't remember ever getting any notifications about anything until within the last year.
Mr. Kramer.
Mr. Chairman, if I might. I got this this case back in June of 14, and I sent him a notice. Actually, I spoke to him on the phone in August of 14, so he didn't know the salesman. Drafted a consent agreement, certified the letter was returned unsigned. I called him and spoke to him again in August, and he confirmed that his address was correct, that I had. So I drafted, I sent him a letter of invite to the board meeting. I sent him the consent agreement, and got no response on any of this.
That's troubling.
And that all happened in 2014?
2014, yes, sir.
Did anything happen from 2014 to 2019 other than the things we know in front of us here?
December of 14, I mailed an amended consent agreement to a different address, I think probably to the maintenance home, whatever, it was different than I had. And there was no response from the respondent, and the case copied my conformity. But nothing has happened since then, no.
Part of me wonders if we do the same administrative penalty but update the cost of investigation, since clearly the state spent more than the original $500. So maybe throw that out as one idea.
I'll make a motion unless there's more discussion.
Do you have?
I'll make a motion that we adopt the following penalties. Letter of reprimand, administrative penalty of $1,000, cost of investigations up to today, updated to today's dollars, and a state suspension as long as he's in compliance with the agreement. I would stipulate 90 days to pay the money back, the penalty and the cost of investigation. So as long as he's in compliance, he's okay. If he doesn't, then the state suspension would kick in and his license would be suspended.
Thank you, Dr. Angel. I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion on the issue? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. This concludes the proceeding. The board's decision will be reduced to a written order and served on the parties. The parties will have further appeal rights that will be explained in the board's order. Thank you for attending today.
Could we just go back to that again? Do you have any idea how long the suspension would be if he was suspended? Is that clear?
That's a good point. I would suggest 6 months suspension.
I'll agree with that update.
I thought the suspension was...
Well, it was stayed.
No, it stayed. So he's not suspended.
I know, but...
But if he doesn't pay it,
if he doesn't pay it, then it should just be suspended until...
Indefinitely? Until in compliance?
Well, yeah, because otherwise you could just say, okay, well, I'm not paying it, and then 90 days pass, and you're like, yeah, I'm fine.
Okay.
It should be indefinitely until you're in compliance.
Do we need to vote on that again?
Is there a change?
No, I don't think that's how it is.
I would amend the motion if it's necessary to say that it's no need.
I don't think it is need.
Okay.
No.
Stayed until he complies.
Yeah, it stayed, it's and if he falls out of compliance, he's suspended until he's in compliance again.
Okay. Could we entertain a motion to amend the order to reflect that, please? Thank you.
I would make a motion to amend the order to reflect that the state suspension, in case the suspension became active, he would be suspended until in compliance with the agreement.
I'll second that amendment.
Okay, we have an amendment and a second to the amendment, amended motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the amended motion passes. Now we've concluded the case. The board's decision will be reduced to a written order and served on the parties. The parties will have further appeal rights that will be explained in the board's order. Thank you for attending today. Okay, so we are moving on to case 5B2, AL 1707, Stevens.
Is the call in?
B2, and I don't see this as a call in.
My bad.
And I don't see anybody here to speak. So, B2. Okay, this is the date, time, and place where the matter dealing with case number AL 17007 is scheduled to be heard by the Arizona State Board of Technical Registration. Will the parties please identify themselves, first the state, then the respondent? And apparently the respondent is not present, is that correct?
Not that I know of.
I don't see a respondent. I don't have anything on the sign-in sheet. Okay, the state filed a motion for the board to deem allegations in the complaint and notice of hearing as admitted. If granted, the board will treat all allegations in the complaint and notice of hearing as true and move directly to a determination of what discipline is appropriate in light of the violations. The state will present a brief statement to the board about its request, and then the respondent can address the board. Please address your remarks to the issue of whether you received the complaint of notice of hearing and why you did not timely file an answer required by the board statutes and rules. The state make its presentation.
Yes, I want to inform the board that Mr. Stevens called me in response to either the motion to deem or I believe it was the complaint. And he left a number, and I did try and call him back, and I left several messages, and he never called me back. So that, I guess, tells us that he got it. He knew about it. And I would then recommend that you accept the motion to deem.
Okay, well, mm-hmm. That's the state's presentation. The respondent is not present. So at this time, the board will deliberate and rule on the state's motion. We can begin with general discussion or move to motions. The first motion will be to determine whether to grant the state's motion to deem or the allegations admitted. So I'm looking for a motion to...
Mr. Chair, I move that we grant the state's motion to deem.
Second that, Chair.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. The board has deemed the allegations in the complaint notice of hearing is admitted. If there's a motion to adopt the, is there a motion to adopt the factual allegations and the alleged violations from the complaint and notice of hearing as findings of fact and conclusions of law?
Sure, I move to do that.
Okay.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to adopt the factual allegations and the alleged violations from the complaint and notice of hearing as findings of fact and conclusion of law. Is there any discussion on that issue? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. The final issue for determination is the appropriate discipline based on findings of fact and conclusion of law we have adopted. We will allow the parties to briefly address the issue. First, the state and the respondent. Ms. Ray?
Yes. Thank you. This was a kind of a difficult case because it wasn't clear whether the prior that Mr. Stevens had was a misdemeanor or a felony. Either one was a misrepresentation. If it was a misdemeanor, he failed to disclose that. If it was a felony, he failed to disclose that. But the problem in this case is that Mr. Stevens did not respond to the request to provide documentation as to what the prior was. So we don't have that information. The only thing you're going on at this point is that he made a false statement on his application. Whether it was a false statement regarding a misdemeanor or whether it was a false statement regarding a felony, we don't know. But either one is a violation. And it's clear that it had to be one or the other because he was convicted. So I recommend that you impose at least $1,000 penalty and remove Mr. Stevens's license.
Thank you, Mr. Ray. The respondent is not present, so we will now deliberate the appropriate discipline to be imposed. The board may consider the following actions pursuant to ARS 36446-07. Issue a letter of reprimand, impose probation requirements that are best adapted to protect the public health, safety, welfare, and that may include a requirement for restitution payments, impose peer review and professional education requirements, impose restrictions on the scope of the respondent's practice, impose administrative penalty in the amount of not more than $2,000 for each violation of the board statutes and rules, suspension for a period of not more than 3 years, or revocation.
I have a question, Kurt. Is Mr. Stevens still even an active, does he still have an active license?
Yes.
I mean, I know he has a number. Is it still active? This was 5 years ago, 4 years ago, something like that.
It says that he's delinquent on the website. expired February of 2018.
When do we cancel? After a year on alarm agents?
Alarm agent registration is currently 3 years, so he's delinquent until...
Until 3 years is up? Okay.
I see two potential ways to move forward. I mean, one is suspend his license and impose a penalty. If he doesn't pay the penalty, then we revoke, or we just go and revoke.
I say revoke.
Make a motion, please.
Okay, I'll make a motion that we revoke Nathaniel Stevens, alarm agent 57304.
Mr. Madison, there was a recommendation for a $1,000 penalty with that. Okay.
I don't think we're going to be able to collect if we revoke.
Not, okay. Not even bother.
Okay.
I'll second that.
Sure. We have a motion and a second to revoke. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor of revocation?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. Motion passes. This concludes the proceeding. The board's decision will be reduced to a written order and served on the parties. The parties will have further appeal rights that will be explained in the board's order. Thank you for attending today. That concludes 5B2. We will move on to 5B3. I have no one signed up and no call-ins on 5B3. This is the date, time, and place where the matter dealing with case number HI-18-024, Thomas Culpepper, is scheduled to be heard by the Arizona State Board of Technical Registration. Will the parties please identify themselves, first the state, then the respondent?
Jeannie Ray, appearing for the state.
And we have no apparent respondent here. We'll move on to the argument. The state filed a motion for the board to deem the allegations in the complaint and notice of hearing as admitted. If granted, the board will treat all allegations in the complaint notice of hearing as true and move directly to a determination of what discipline is appropriate in light of the violations. The state will present a brief statement to the board about its request, and then the respondent can address the board. Please address your remarks to the issue of whether you received a complaint of notice of hearing and why you did not timely file an answer as required by the board's statutes and rules. Would the state please make the presentation?
I don't have anything very interesting to say about Mr. Culpepper because nobody hears from him. I haven't talked to him. I don't, you know, we sent this to his address of record, so he hasn't changed that. We have to assume that it's it was served because it went to his address of record. So I recommend that you accept the motion to deem.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we accept the motion to deem the allegations in the complaint notice of hearing.
Second.
So we have a motion and a second, noting that there is no respondent here. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. Motion passes. The board has deemed the allegations in complaint notice of hearing is admitted. Is there a motion to adopt the factual allegations and alleged violations from the complaint, notice of hearing, and findings of fact and conclusions of law?
So moved. Second.
I have a motion and a second to adopt the factual allegations and the alleged violations from the complaint and notice of hearing as findings of fact and conclusions of law. Any further discussion on that? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. Motion passes. The final issue for determination is the appropriate discipline based on the findings of fact and conclusion of law that we have adopted. We will allow the parties to briefly address the issue, first the state and the respondent. Would the state make their presentation?
I again defer to the board for this one, although I do think it might be interesting to find out whether or not Mr. Culpepper still has an active license as well.
Yes, he does, and he just renewed 3 months ago.
Well, then, seriously?
I don't understand.
How did he get
through
without
us? He got a pending case?
Was there a change of address?
There was not.
Yep. So...
I don't understand how he got it. How could he renew if he had a case?
He renews by operation of law. And then what we do is we initiate discipline afterwards, so that's what we've done. And...
Wait, how did he pay? Because always we chose the liquid one. He had to pay.
He's active.
He's not active. He's not the liquid one.
He paid.
Right. How did he pay and we don't know where to find him, or how do we...
We know where to find him. He just won't respond.
His renewal went to the address that we sent everything else to, and he responded by renewing.
Oh, okay, well, this is your revocation too.
There are issues of regulatability here for you to discuss.
Obviously.
So, considering the gentleman has not shown up and asked for leniency, I would take another look at the administrative penalty on this one. This seems really odd that he would renew and not want to approach the board with his concerns about this.
I don't know. My opinion is just what Melissa said. He's unregulatable. So, I would say revocation.
I second. If that was a motion.
I mean, we're just in discussion now, but I will make that motion.
I want to point out that the consent agenda had a restitution, and there must have been some damages to the alleger, and so I would love for that to be on the table as well, because there's an injured party.
You won't do anything against
him. But I'm guessing that he's not responding to any of this stuff, so he's not going to respond to that either. It can't be one where he says he never got it, because like Kurt said, if he got his renewal and sent him the money for the renewal, he has to know about this.
It's a shame Melanie Lawson won't be able to.
Do you know the amount of the restitution? I don't remember it.
$420.
That's right. Restitution in the original consent agenda.
Again, the only alternative could be we suspend him
pending, and
put a penalty, monetary and restitution. And if he doesn't pay and comply within 30 days, then we revoke. Stay revocation.
Yeah.
And I'd be fine with that, too, as long as it... Now, if we do a stayed revocation, then do we have to come back to do this hearing again?
No.
It's automatic. I'm fine with that.
I think give him 30 days to make it whole with Ms. Lawson.
Well, and everything else.
Yeah.
Okay. So...
So civil penalty of, what was it?
Let's see, it's
it was originally
letter reprimand, state suspension, and probation, peer review, remedial training, restitution in the amount of $420, administrative penalty, the amount of $1,000 cost of investigation up to this point, including...
We say all the terms of the consent agreement with the addition of a state revocation, that if he doesn't comply with all the other terms within 60 days, he's revoked.
So it's not state suspension, it's state revocation.
State revocation.
For 30
days. And then otherwise the consent
agreement. So, it's the consent agreement.
It's not a consent agreement.
Sorry, it's what we had offered to consent.
Right.
Mine was the letter of reprimand, and instead we're suspending him today.
When he gets it.
State revocation today.
Yeah, well, he's suspended today with a state revocation today. If he complies with the terms of the agreement within 60 days, then he can get...
we don't want to practice him in the interim.
Right. Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, so he's suspended today with a state revocation.
Suspended today, state revocation. Okay. So...
It is 30 days.
Are we going to start from...
Enough for him to theoretically comply?
I don't know when this came originally in.
No, I mean from today, though.
I know, but... Terms.
Paid his application.
10/23/2018, so okay. It's already been almost a year.
Okay, so let's try this and see if this works.
Make a motion.
Okay. I will make a motion that we have peer review similar to what was in the consent agreement, remedial training consistent with what was in the consent agreement, restitution of $420, payment of an administrative penalty of $1,000, the cost of investigation.
To date.
And a suspension.
A letter of reprimand.
And a letter of reprimand.
Actually, if I may just suggest. What I'm hearing is, or what I heard, I thought I heard, is that you'd like to revoke his license. You want to stay that revocation subject to his compliance with the peer review, the training, the restitution, the civil penalty, and the investigative cost. If everything isn't completed within 60 days, then the stay will be lifted and his license will be revoked.
Yes, correct. But in the interim, in the 60 days, he's still suspended. So he has a 60-day suspension as well.
Okay, thank you.
Not stay, but an actual suspension for the next 60 days. We don't want him practicing.
Gotcha.
While he complies with the agreement.
But let me ask you, does he need to have a license to do the peer review activities?
No, because it's not prepaid.
Okay. Perfect. I just didn't want to...
Good question.
That's a great question. Okay.
Good.
So that's the motion.
Okay.
And J-Man seconds, right?
Sure.
Okay.
So we do have a motion and a second on the table. Ms. Ray, do you have anything to add? I think we might have cut you short.
No,
a few
I'm
minutes
fine.
Back. Okay. Okay.
She's just listening.
Okay, so we have the motion is presented. Is there any further discussion on the item? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion?
Does he have the suspension up there?
I'd take 60 days out. Take that part out before suspension. It's just a suspension.
Well, how do we reinstate him if he complies with everything?
Well, then he's reinstated.
When?
Well, the 60 days is addressed later. I think the suspension is... I don't want there to be confusion that he's suspended beyond payment. He's suspended effective date of the order, right?
Until?
And then he has 60 days to complete. Once he completes, the suspension's lifted.
What if he completes the first week?
Well, then the suspension's lifted.
Okay.
All
right.
Okay. I think we tie the time period to the...
Right. I agree.
Okay, so the suspension is...
He's just suspended.
Until in compliance.
Right. Suspension until compliance.
And the state revocation is if he falls out of compliance, then the stay is lifted. Yeah. I'll
fix it. Suspension effective day of order until compliance. Yep. Stay revocation subject to compliance.
Effective.
Completed at 30 days. Effective date, not effective.
It's saying it's subject to be lifted if compliant within 60 days.
Correct. Take out the knots.
I'd like typing out five people just...
I know.
It's like a
backseat driving's got nothing on us.
Okay, we have this motion in front of us.
And Kurt, it should be effective, not effective.
Peer reviews, remedial training, $420 restitution, administrative penalty of $1,000, cost of investigation as of today, suspension, effective day of the order until compliance, letter of reprimand, stay of revocation subject to be lifted if compliant within 60 days of the effective day. Of the order.
Isn't that if non-compliant at the end? The stay of revocation is lifted.
That's right.
Yeah, the stay of revocation will be lifted if non-compliance after 60 days.
You're right, start with that.
We're going to lift the stay and then we're going to revoke.
This is the stay of revocation. If not complying within 60 days. Okay, that makes sense.
Not compliant, yes.
The stay
is lifted. You're right,
yeah.
Double negative.
We are not revoking.
Who made this motion?
It's a mess.
Do you know what we mean?
Okay, so we have this motion and second.
So he's suspended as of today.
Yes.
And he has 60 days to comply with all the terms of the previously offered consent agreement.
Oh, he's revoked.
Otherwise, we're revoking
him. Yeah.
Perfect.
So if he does a job today or tomorrow,
he's in violation.
He won't know that this happens.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is the motion in front of us.
No, because his website will say.
It's been seconded.
If you were here.
I have discussion. If this person is unregulatable, I believe we should just revoke his license, and that's all I have to say.
Thank you.
But if he complies with everything in the next 60 days, maybe he's not unregulatable.
He's just a little slow on getting stuff done.
Plus, we just went through this whole effort.
In 60 days, you're going to get your wish anyway, so.
Yeah. We have a motion and a second.
But Carmen was worried about the restitution part of it.
There is an injured party here, so I'd love for her to have restitution. If she has a chance.
It's very thoughtful.
Aye.
Yes, all in favor. All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Any opposed? Nay.
Cool.
The motion passes. This concludes the proceeding. The board decision will be reduced to a written order and served on the parties. The parties will have further appeal rights that will be explained in the board's order. Thank you for attending today. That concluded item 5B3. We'll move on to
the dentist.
Item 5B5.
We don't regulate dentists.
Oh, man. About
four. We're not doing four?
We did four already, didn't we?
No. We talked about
four. We were thinking of 6A4.
Oh, maybe I am.
Chairman?
Yes.
Would it be possible to skip to C1 since I believe Mr. Borgoni's attorney is here?
Yes. Board have any objections to that? Okay. Okay, we will move on to 6C1.
No, 5C.
No.
5C.
I'm sorry, it's 5C1. Thank you. I'm not used to having so many fives.
Yeah.
Okay, so 5C1. The issue in front of us is whether to accept, modify, or reject the signed consent agreement in lieu of a hearing. The case is HI 15008, and the respondent is Ronaldo Borgoni. And in front of us we have his counsel.
Yes, my name is Carly White.
Thank you, Carly.
Borgoni.
Carly, explain to the board why you're here.
Well, we represent Mr. Borgoni, and we met with the Attorney General, Ms. Ray, I believe it was last month, and talked about the terms of the consent agreement. We came up with some terms together. We wanted to present those to the board for hopeful acceptance. This matter has been around for a while. I understand you have other matters on the agenda that have been as well, I believe on behalf of my client that the terms of this agreement are hopefully fair and show accountability for what occurred approximately almost 10 years ago now. Hopefully, I can also say that Mr. Borgoni has a lot more experience under his belt at this time. I think he's nearing 1,000 inspections at this point. He would like to rectify the situation and accord with the terms in this consent agreement that's been proposed today.
Ms. Ray, do you have anything to offer on that?
I recommend that you accept the consent agreement. I did notify the alleges in this situation. They do not appear to be present, but they were notified that they could be present if they wanted to be. This is a sensitive case because there was an injury involved, and I think what I would present to the board is that the legal causation of that injury is not directly attributable to what the respondent did, in my opinion. And so this consent agreement is not identical to the one that you originally approved. But I think it's appropriate.
Mr. Chair, I move that we accept the signed consent agreement in lieu of hearing in Mr. Borgoni's matter.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. This concludes the mater. Thank you.
Thank you for working something out.
Thank you.
That was 5C1.
Mr. Montgomery.
Okay, we will jump back to 5B4.
That's the one you were going to try to do.
This is the date, time, and place where the matter dealing with case number HI19003, respondent Theodore Gosard, is scheduled to be heard by the Arizona State Board of Technical Registration. Will the parties please identify themselves, first the state, then the respondent?
Dean Ray for the state.
Is the respondent present? I don't see here or see anybody signed up on the sign-in sheet. The state filed a motion for the board to deem the allegations in the complaint notice of hearing as admitted. If granted, the board will treat all allegations in the complaint notice of hearing as true and move directly to a determination of what discipline is appropriate in light of the violations. The state will present a brief statement to the board about its request, and then the respondent can address the board. Please address your remarks to the issue of whether you received the complaint and notice of hearing and why you did not timely file an answer with required by the state's board's statutes and rules. Would the state make their presentation?
You've seen Mr. Gosser before. This is the second violation that I've handled. I think the last time you were here, or we were here on this, you thought about just missing this one, or you know, getting rid of it, because I believe you revoked him on his last one. I and the director conferred on this, and I felt that it would be appropriate to impose a fine because Mr. Gosser is just not responding to the board. So it was my opinion that he could impose a fine at some time. Maybe it would hurt him where it really matters.
Yeah. Yeah. We can send it to collections if he doesn't pay.
And you do have the authority in the statute to issue civil penalties against unlicensed.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything further, Ms. Ray?
No.
Okay. Of course, we don't have a respondent here. So at this time, the board will deliberate and rule on the state's motion. We can begin with general discussion or move to motions. The first motion will be to determine whether to grant the state's motion to deem the allegations admitted.
Chair, I'll make a motion to recommend the state's position to deem.
Okay, and that motion is to deem the allegations admitted?
Yes.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. The board has deemed the allegations in the complaint and notice of hearing is admitted. Is there a motion to adopt the factual allegations and the alleged violations from the complaint and notice of hearings as findings of fact and conclusions of law?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to adopt the allegations and the alleged violations from the complaint notice of hearing as findings of fact and conclusion of law. Any discussion on the matter? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. The final issue for determination is the appropriate discipline based on the findings of fact and conclusion of law we have adopted. We will allow the parties to briefly address the issue, first the state and then the respondent. Ms. Ray, do you have anything to add or would you like to? Okay, thank you. Respondent's not present. We will now deliberate on the appropriate discipline to be imposed. The board may consider the following actions pursuant to ARS 36446.07. Issue a letter of reprimand.
Yep.
Can't do any of that stuff.
He's not licensed.
He's not licensed.
Civil penalty.
Okay.
Civil penalty.
So our only course of action here is a civil penalty.
And Mr. Chairman, members of the board, you may want to look at page 366 of your materials. That appears to be the start of the order of the consent agreement that was initially offered to you. There is an assurance of discontinuance, a cost of investigations, and I do not see a civil penalty in here, but that's something you
said. Oh, 2000 is at the bottom of 366.
Thank you.
I'll make a motion on this. I mean, from the investigative conclusions, it looks like we have three violations, ARS 32-145-1, ARS 32-145-2, ARS 32-141. So I'll make a motion that we issue a civil penalty in the amount of $6,000 and cost of investigation to date. Assurance of discontinuance, can we do that anymore? I can't keep track if we can or not.
Probably not.
Okay. So, civil penalty, $6,000, cost of investigation to date.
Second.
I'm sorry. How much time did you want to give the individual?
30 days.
30 days. Works for me.
Thank you.
And is this one that after 30-day time frame, we will go to collections?
We can refer it.
Okay.
So we have a motion and a second to issue the following order. Civil penalty of $6,000, cost of investigation to date, to be paid within 30 days or forward to collections. Is that correct?
Correct.
Motion made.
Okay, any discussion on the item? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. This concludes the proceeding. The board's decision will be reduced to a written order and served on the parties. The parties will have further appeal rights that will be explained in the board's order. Thank you for attending today. Okay, we will move on to item 5B5. This is the date, time, and place where the matter dealing with case number P18005, Annie Essery, is scheduled to be heard by the Arizona State Board of Technical Registration. Will the parties please identify themselves, first the state and then the respondent?
Deanie Ray for the state.
And the respondent does not appear to be present. The state filed a motion for the board to deem the allegations in the complaint and notice of hearing as admitted. If granted, the board will treat all allegations in the complaint and notice of hearing as true and move directly to the determination of what discipline is appropriate in light of the violations. The state will present a brief statement to the board about its request, and then the respondents can address the board. Please address your remarks to the issue of whether you received a complaint, notice of hearing, and why you did not timely file an answer as required by the board's statutes and rules. Ms. Ray, would you make the state's presentation?
Yeah, Ms. Essery responded to the board at one time and said that the reason this happened was because she had hired some teenagers that were putting the seal, the engineer seal on these reports, special investigation certificates that were filed with the city of Phoenix. I submit that that's not a credible explanation of what happened. And if it is, there's some concern about the level of supervision that was going on in that office. But it's an impressive list of documents that had false seals on them. They're in the list is in pages 4 through 5, and actually there's page 6 of the of the complaint and notice of hearing. I don't know what those pages are in your packet, but
39.
I have spoken to the alleger, and he was available and willing and ready to appear. We just did not receive any kind of response from Ms. Essery, so I recommend that you accept the motion to deem and that you impose a
significant penalty in this case.
Okay, we have no respondent. So at this time, the board will deliberate and rule on the state's motion. We can bring with general discussion or move to motions. The first motion will be to determine whether to grant the state's motion to deem and the allegations admitted.
So moved, Chair.
Second. Okay, we've got a motion to deem the allegations admitted. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. The board has deemed the allegations and the complaint notice of hearing is admitted. Is there a motion to adopt the factual allegations and the alleged violations from the complaint and notice of hearing as findings of fact and conclusions of law?
So moved. Second.
We have a motion and a second to adopt the factual allegations and the alleged violations from the complaint and notice of hearing as findings of fact and conclusions of law. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. The final issue for determination is the appropriate discipline based on the findings of fact and conclusions of law we have adopted. We will allow the parties to briefly address the issue. First, the state.
All right. I doubt that Ms. Essery is in practice still. I think this pretty much killed her practice, this whole situation. But I do find there's a couple of culpability here with regard to just cavalier use of somebody else's seal. So I recommend that I wouldn't multiply, 2,000 times more than 27 of them.
39 of them.
$78,000.
There's
a lot of them. I don't recommend that, but
I do think that something significant. You said a real record. On 440, originally our staff recommendation
was 20 grand. Civil penalty. Wow. A lot of money. Was this ever referred over to the AG's office? I don't think it was referred criminally.
I think it's a criminal issue.
Yeah, I don't think they'll take it, but I think it's worth sending over. Okay, so do you need to read your little spiel?
I will accept any motions.
I'll go ahead. Well, our original one was for $20,000, so I'll make a motion that we civil penalty of $20,000, cost investigation to date, and to refer this matter over to the AG's office for criminal prosecution. Paid within 30 days.
We have a motion. I'm looking for a second.
Second.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second for a civil penalty of $20,000, the cost of investigation. To date, to be paid within 30 days and refer this matter to the AG's Office for Criminal Prosecution. Any further discussion on the matter? Everybody comfortable with the motion as written? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. Motion passes. This concludes the proceeding. The board's decision will be reduced to a written order and served on the parties. The parties will have further appeal rights that will be explained in the board's order. Thank you all for attending today. That concludes 5B5. We will move on to 5D1. Okay, we have several call-ins.
Two call-ins.
Oh, my God.
Swapping
up first. This
thing's
beating
us down.
Okay. Revocation.
Mr. Chair, we may need a brief break.
Okay.
Let's call in for a health break.
Okay, let's take a 10 to 15 minute health break here.
Okay.
Back to order here.
applications. I'll go get my structural engineer license just to report you.
Would you please?
It'll take a while anyway, right?
And we left off with...
We'll still be here. Maybe one of your kids can...
Or we'll resume with item 5D1. And this is case number HI-16023. The respondent is Scott Fidel, home inspector certification, number 52986, Fidelity Home Inspection. So,
I'm going to call him.
Oh, yes, we've got some call-ins.
Ms. Clark Rothschild.
Yes, may I please speak to Patrick Lopez?
May I ask who's calling, please?
Kurt Winter from the Arizona Board of Technical Registration regarding the board meetings.
Okay, you're breaking up. I'm sorry, your name again?
Kurt Winter.
Okay, hold on, Kurt.
Is it summer?
Yes.
We know your time is important. Thank you for holding. We will be with you as soon as possible.
Yeah. What a joke. Hey, I didn't respond for 3 years, but can you take everything out, please? No. No.
Hi, Mr. Winter.
Hello, Mr. Lopez. I'm going to put you on a brief hold as I call Mr. Fidel, okay?
Great, thank you.
You have dialed is not in service. Please check the number and try your call again.
Nah, that's not good.
The number you have dialed is not in service. Please check the number.
Ask Mr. Lopez to get hold of his client.
Mr. Lopez, I'm trying to call Mr. Fidel's number, and it doesn't connect. Do you possibly have his number that I can write down to make sure I have the correct one?
Yeah, Scott's number. They have 1 second. Let me grab it here for you.
1-800.
This is area code 520-465-7677.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Lopez. I'm going to put you on hold again.
Okay. Hello, this is Scott.
Mr. Fidel, this is Kurt Winter at the board meeting. I'm going to put you on a brief hold so I connect you and Mr. Lopez on this call, so hold on, please.
Okay.
Mr. Lopez, are you there?
I am.
Mr. Fidel, are you there?
I am.
Okay,
we have the respondent and the respondent's attorney on the phone. We are looking at case HI-16023, the consent agreement and order of discipline for Scott Fidel, home inspector number 52986. At the table we have Scott Donald representing the state, and we will start with Mr. Donald. Mr. Donald, why are you here?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the board. Well, we're actually here because Mr. Lopez and Mr. Fidel had offered a counteroffer in settlement of the case. We have been negotiating a settlement.
I'm sorry, but I cannot hear what he's saying.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is this better?
If you could say something again.
Certainly. Is this better?
Yeah, the connection was intermittent.
Oh, sure. we're here today because we have a potential consent agreement. The respondent in the case that is meeting essentially a counter offer. They made an offer in settlement, a couple of modifications to a consent agreement that we have been working on, and essentially it is an agreement for the board to look at and decide if they would, if they accept the offer, or if they reject it, or if they, there should be modifications to it. Essentially, materials that the board has include a consent offer with red lines from respondent's counsel. So it would be a matter of the board determining whether or not the consent agreement is drafted is something that they would enter into. I'd be happy to answer any questions about it. I don't necessarily have a problem with the edits from the state's position. There are a couple of points. I do think that there is a redundancy in it in the factual or the findings of fact under paragraph 18. I believe it's redundant with paragraph 17. Paragraph 17 established the complainants were out of state and didn't attend the home inspection. That's reiterated in paragraph 18. Some of the language in 18, I don't have an issue with being amended. I do think there's a redundancy in there. Arguably, additionally, there's language in paragraph 18 indicating that the real estate agent scheduled the inspection knowing the complainants would be out of state the date of the inspection. I don't know that. I don't know that she... I know that the complainants were out of state on that date, but I don't know that the real estate agent knew they were going to be out of state on that date. So I don't know that that's a factual statement. Outside of that, in paragraph 19, there is a redundant that in the second line, line 11. Beyond that, modifications, I'm not necessarily opposed to from the state's standpoint. The big one would be removal of administrative penalty, but an agreement to pay fees and costs up to amount of $2,000. I would request that the board, if the board were entertaining administrative penalty, as the respondent is willing to put $2,000 in fees and costs, as the board has not incurred that, not yet in fees and costs, certainly any amount up to the $2,000 that has not been incurred in fees and costs could be shifted to administrative penalty if the board felt the administrative penalty were appropriate. So those are essentially my biggest comments on this. Additionally, there's a redundant one where the administrative penalty was removed. If there are any substantive questions about the issues raised or anything like that, I'd be more than happy to address any of those as well. Or about proceeding to a hearing, what we'd be proceeding with. Now, there is a letter which I was provided today, which I believe was distributed to all board members from Realty Executives, that would be was provided our respondents, and that would be on target for one of the allegations, the primary allegation in the plaintiff's So the board members may want to review that if they have not done so already.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Donald. I think it's appropriate to hear from Mr. Lopez. Mr. Lopez, do you have anything to add on behalf of the respondent?
Thank you, members of the board. I really don't have a lot to add. If you have any questions, I can answer them. But I think the main point that that we have is under conclusions of law 2 and 3. Obviously, we dispute that there was any wrongdoing that occurred, and we have the facts to all back that up. But you know, we've been trying to work with the board and Mr. Donald for quite some time now to resolve this matter, and are eager to do so.
Thank you, Mr. Lopez. Does anybody have any questions? Anybody on the board have any questions of either the respondent or the state?
Well, I do, I guess. Mr. Donald, this case was back from 2016. Have you been working with Mr. Lopez for 3 years to try to resolve this case?
No, this case was part of the backlog. We've not been working since 2016. We've been working since last year.
Since he would have got, a notice of hearing on it?
We actually began working with Mr. Lopez, I believe, prior to complaint notice of hearing initially. Prior to the complaint notice of hearing going out in this case.
Okay. But we would have sent this consent agreement out to Mr. Fidel back in 2016. Is that correct?
This consent agreement that Mr. Lopez is providing a counter to is one that we had a settlement conference and we reached a settlement that we didn't have all of the terms 100% worked out, but we then put together a settlement agreement based upon that. Mr. Lopez has redlined the settlement agreement. But no, this is not a consent agreement that would have been offered when this was initially in the investigation.
Okay, so we never the board went to that part?
I don't know if the board offered prior to voting to complain in a hearing. I don't know if back then, if I'm sure there was,
Right. So at some point in the past, we offered a consent agreement that wasn't signed, and then do we know when that was? I'm just curious. I'm just curious why, you know, is this person regulatable if they just ignore it until it jumps to the next step? Or, you know, I don't want to see a reoccurring pattern if there is another issue.
I can respond to that.
Okay, please do.
So this is actually a 4-year-old case. I did this inspection in October of 2015. I was originally offered a consent agreement, and I had agreed to the terms of the consent agreement, frankly, even though I did not feel I was guilty. But in the interest of resolving this matter, I agree to the terms. That was addressed with Mr. Hunt, was my primary contact. The board was presented with the consent agreement, and the head of the board, Mr. Schwartz, disagreed with the settlement and threw it out, and levied far more severe penalties than I could agree to. And we then requested an ALJ review, and the case sat for years. My attorney traveled to Phoenix, met with members of the board and Mr. Donald. It was my understanding that they reached an understanding of what the circumstances were, and they were to get back to us. We did not hear from them. We reached out multiple times, I did through my counsel, to try to bring a resolution to this case. I can share with you that it's been incredibly costly to the tune of nearly $20,000. And litigation fees addressing this issue, and it's been incredibly stressful for me. We have tried everything on our end to resolve this matter, and it's brought us to today.
Okay. Thank you.
I have a quick comment. This is Alejandro Angel. I'm concerned with the proposed changes to the consent agreement. I can't stomach the language that says the board believes. That has no admission, you know, no weight of any kind, so I can't agree to those changes. I also think it's inappropriate not to have an administrative penalty in this type of situation. I would recommend that we don't modify the agreement, and if we need to go to hearing, we do so.
Is that a motion?
Based on what evidence are you going to provide that there was wrongdoing?
Based on the fact that, you know, Mr. Fidel did not have the clients present at the meeting and that he was an associate of the other realtor who was representing him. That doesn't seem to be like it's an appropriate disclosure of conflicts as required by statute. Or
I was not aware that the client was not going to be present. And once I was at the inspection and discovered that the client was not present, I had his agent representative contact him, and we provided the board with written communications from him apologizing for not being present and asking us to proceed with the inspection. And that's all been presented.
Okay.
And this is Mr. Lopez, if I may say something.
Sure, absolutely.
Thank you. The Ms. Sheridan, who was the real estate agent representing the complainants, she provided a statement that has been provided amongst the materials where, you know, she explains the circumstances of how the inspection was scheduled, and she explains that she knew they were out of town in Texas. She talked to them about the difficulties of doing an inspection and just proceeding with trying to close the deal itself with them not present. She explained that they wanted to get the inspection done anyway, even though they were out of town. She scheduled it knowing that. Scott did not, but when the inspection occurred, you know, as far as I can tell, and I'm looking directly at the Arizona chapter of the American Society of Home Inspectors, the standards of professional practice that the Arizona Board of Technical Registration has available, and it says under Section 2, Purpose and Scope, that inspectors shall, before the inspection report is delivered, enter into a written agreement with the client or their authorized agent. And that is what occurred here. There's no doubt that Ms. Sheridan was the authorized agent and was proceeding in full authority with her client. And we provided the agreement to the agent, and I don't know what else to say.
I understand. I think the aggravating circumstance here is the fact that Ms. Sheridan was a business partner of Mr. Fidel. So I don't think the conflict wasn't disclosed prior to, so they had no knowledge of the situation. The complainants had no knowledge of the situation prior to the inspection. Ms. Sheridan and Mr. Fidel should have said, you know what, I can't do this inspection. You need to get another inspector that does not have a conflict of interest, and he failed to do that.
Well, there was no conflict of interest, and the facts are actually that the disclosures were made. Ms. Sheridan actually says in her statement that with respect to organizing or scheduling the inspection, that she could... That she could set the inspection up with one of the inspectors identified in the seller's statute, there was an authorized, whatever the document is.
Affiliated services disclosure.
Yeah, and then so that had been provided to the to her client, and she talked to her client about scheduling the inspection when.
Were they aware that Mr. Fidel was also a real estate agent with Realty Executives?
Yeah. Yes, because that's what's on the affiliated disclosure, and it's actually what's in his contract has that disclosure in it.
Signed, Melissa Cornelius for the board. I just want to point the board members to my concern about this case, which is that Mr. Fidel is a home inspector in addition to being a realtor, and the home inspector rules clearly say you cannot be part of a pay-for-play joint vendor situation. So even though Ms. Sheridan, who was a colleague of his as a realtor, was the representative for these particular clients, Mr. Fidel has a different responsibility relating to his home inspector certification, which he has not addressed here, and which I think is the concern this board has, that he needs to know as a home inspector to disclose these potential conflicts and not be part of a pay-for-play preferred vendor program, which evidence in this case clearly indicates. And that's my understanding why we're here today.
There is no evidence of any pay-for-play anything. That's what the letter that you received this morning is to address.
What evidence do you have that there's been pay-for-play?
There's your name, given a letter from the bottom of the form.
Excuse me. You've just been given a letter from the owner of Realty Executive telling you that no such agreement exists. You have no evidence that any money or pay-for-play has occurred. You're just simply making an allegation.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, this is Mark Harris, the board's independent legal advisor on this matter. I would just like to kind of refocus the discussion. This isn't the opportunity to present evidence one way or another. What we're here to consider is modifications to the consent agreement. That's what's before you this morning, and I would ask that you try to limit your questions to the proposed changes to the consent agreement and whether or not they're acceptable to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Harris.
Did we have a motion?
Well, I was about to, but I don't know if there's any more discussion. My point is that I cannot agree to the modifications that say the board believes the board believes.
I would agree with you, Dr. Angel. I can't live with those either. As far as the...
So unless there's more discussion, I would make a motion that we reject the changes to the consent, the proposed changes to the consent agreement, and either get a signed consent agreement or move forward to hearing with the case to review the facts at that point.
I hear nothing else. Would you care to make a motion?
That is a motion.
I'll second that, Chair.
Okay, so the motion in front of us is... we have a motion and a second to reject the respondent's counteroffer consent agreement.
Yeah, and if the offered consent agreement that was negotiated is not signed within 30 days, then proceed to hearing.
Would have been nice if you guys didn't take 4 years to get to this point. Pretty despicable. Through your own incompetence, 4 years. 4 years. I've done 1,500 home inspections since this matters. Pathetic.
I think the board would be willing to entertain...
So we have a motion in front of us and a second, and the motion is to reject the respondent's counteroffer consent agreement, and if the consent agreement is not signed, proceed to hearing. Is that correct, Dr. Angel?
That's correct.
30 days.
Shame on all of you.
Okay, so we have that not signed within 30 days. We'll proceed to formal hearing. That's the motion. Any further discussion on the item? Hearing none, I'll call for the question. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Thank you, Mr. Lopez. Thank you, Mr. Fidel.
And Mr. Chair, if I may, just as a just one point of clarification, as the matter was initially set for formal hearing this morning, then this should the consent agreement not be signed, then when you say within 30 days to proceed to hearing, that would be the next board meeting after the expiration of 30 days from the offer?
My understanding is this has a hearing date at OWA, the first week of October.
Well, I apologize. I saw it was under consideration of cases referred for formal hearing. I thought it was intended for this one. I'm sorry. So this would be a continuance of the date at OWA, if necessary. It's first week of October. Okay. So this would be a continuance of the date.
Well, I don't think it's that complicated of a case. I would be okay with changing my motion to say that if it's not signed in 7 days, we move to hearing.
As scheduled, yeah.
I mean, as Mr. Fidel pointed out, it's taken too long, and I don't think the agreement is that complicated. They either accept it or they don't.
If I may comment, members of the board?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
We were told that the hearing would not proceed because of the consent agreement and the efforts of the board to consider it and to decide on it. We have to subpoena witnesses. We have, it isn't as simple as you think it is. We have to present witnesses. We have to arrange for them to be available. We have to subpoena them if necessary. So
You're right. I withdraw what I said.
And the state has no opposition whatsoever to continue.
30 days for consideration and then rescheduling the hearing.
So there's no change to the item as voted on, correct?
Right.
And Mr. Donald, would you state that court date once again? That you know?
As I understand, it's presently set for the first week in October. We would be requesting to continue that date out to provide for a date at least 30 days after the effective date of the consent agreement offer. So at least 30 days from today. But with the scheduling, though, I should imagine we're probably looking at 6 to 8 weeks.
Okay. Mr. Lopez, did you catch all of that?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Okay, is there anything else on this item? Hearing nothing, I'll close the item. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, so that is all of item 5.
Yep.
We do have one person signed up that hasn't had the opportunity to speak yet. And that is Taylor Hansen in 6A5. So we will go to 6A5.
And Mr. Chair, we do also have Mr. Polk here, I believe, on 6D.
Six, what number?
6D1.
We're doing
6A5
first.
Right?
Yeah,
we're on 6A5. And Mr. Chair, Mr. Hansen is only here to answer questions if need be. He really has no statements to provide at this time.
Okay, so 6A5. This is case number P19-058, and it is a complaint proposed for resolution by dismissal or closure. The complaint is the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent failed to communicate with another registered land surveyor regarding information related to a boundary survey related to boundary corners on a survey that the respondent conducted in Big Chino Valley in Yavapai County, Arizona. And the staff recommends that the complaint brought against the respondent be dismissed. So while we have the respondent here, this would be your opportunity to talk. I know you said that you really don't have anything to offer in addition to this, but...
Yeah, I didn't know it was dismissed, so I thought maybe you'd have some questions for me.
Okay. Well, thank you for coming here and spending the time.
It was interesting. I'm on the enforcement board, and so I'm usually closer to that side, and so it's good to see what's going on.
Okay.
Thank you for volunteering as well.
I'll make a motion to dismiss case P-19-058 against Mr. Hansen.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. Motion passes. Thank you, Mr. Hansen.
Sure.
I hope your morning gets better.
It's been good so far.
Okay, so Hansen's done. And what item is Mr. Folk here for?
E1.
6E1, so we will go to 6E1. Welcome, Mr. Folk, and thank you for your patience.
Good morning. Thank you, members of the board. I apologize for not sporting a coat and tie today. I worked late last night and neglected to check my calendar before leaving for the office this morning. So I'm so disappointed because I have shoes that I think Mr. Jones would appreciate. He's not here. But in any event, I appreciate the board's invitation for us to appear today. I don't know if you have questions for me. I can give you a quick recap of the history of this matter from Mr. Robichaud's perspective, and because it has been a while, and this matter was briefed and then put on hold for a while.
Please do, Mr. Polk.
Okay. So I'm here to represent Brian Robichaud today. Mr. Robichaud could not be with us. He has retired and relocated out of the state. He currently lives in northern Georgia, and he tells me he's in very ill health, currently under doctor's care, and was unable to participate on the phone today or to appear for this matter. The complaint and the investigation against him to the board was brought in connection with a series of projects that were designed and built by the Scottsdale Unified School District at a time when Mr. Robichaud was the owner and CEO of Hunt Caraway Architects. To really try and keep it short, the school district had a bond issued to replace a number of schools. They hired a number of architects to design those schools. And unfortunately, not everybody in the district liked the new school design. And so there was some active opposition. It got into the press at the time that there were parents that didn't want to see the Hopi Elementary School replaced. And next thing we know, an anonymous complaint was filed with this board accusing Mr. Robichaud of having falsely represented that he was a licensed architect, and also bringing out other aspects or facts about him, or assumed facts, in an attempt to disparage his character. He provided a very detailed response to the effect that he has never represented that he is a licensed architect. Brian has a degree in architecture. He has worked in this field for many years, and as you know, it's perfectly legal and appropriate for a non-registrant to own an architectural firm or serve as an officer, as long as they have designated principals who are licensed architects, and that was the case with Hunt Caraway. Originally, David Hunt, the namesake of the firm, was the designated principal. When Mr. Hunt retired, Brian bought his interest, but the architectural services were taken over by Tamara Caraway, his partner, and there were other licensed architects that were responsible for all of the work that I'm describing here. Brian's role was in management and business development, and in that capacity he was very active with the school district. He was out and about with meetings for these projects and attending things with the school. And honestly, I don't know why he got singled out, but this board was incorrectly advised that he had misrepresented that he was licensed. So we've responded to all of that. I communicated with Mr. Kramer about that. I had asked if the board had any other questions. I'm not aware of any questions from the board about the complaint that that we haven't answered. We were trying to get it set up for resolution once before, and then the Attorney General's office filed suit against Brian, the Scottsdale Unified School District, and Brian's former firm concerning some different matters, again coming out of this this school building project. And so we had to resolve those issues. Now, in that case, really the crux of the case involved the selection committee for the selection of a contractor to build one of these schools. And for those that haven't been through the process, the statute specifies that the awarding agency, in this case the school district, puts together a committee. The statute specifies the requirements of who may serve on that committee, and those people meet to consider the proposals that have been submitted and make a recommendation to the school board for award. It was customary, this is my understanding, it was customary in Scottsdale that architectural firms that were involved in the district's work would participate in these selection committees. So Brian was invited to serve on a committee to award, recommend an award of a contract on, I believe, two different schools, one that was designed by Hunt Caraway and a different school. What he didn't know, and what none of us understood until the Attorney General filed suit, was the statute concerning these committees says that the architect member has to be an architect. And unfortunately, Brian acknowledged that he inadvertently violated the statute because he didn't recognize that as used in statute, it meant a licensed architect. So we ended up resolving that complaint with a consent order. There was a modest administrative penalty, an assurance of discontinuance, a number of things that are spelled out in the judgment which I provided to the board. And Brian has complied with all the terms and conditions of it. He paid the penalty, and that consent order is in effect for about 6 years. So practically speaking, Brian never expects to work with an architectural firm again. He's told me he's an older gentleman. He's retired. And we resolved the case with the state because it needed to be resolved, and we were able to do so. I don't know of anything else that I could share with the board, but I was told that some board members had questions about these matters, so I came here today to do the best I could in responding to this board.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a couple questions?
Please do.
Mr. Falk, thank you for being here. Quick question. I mean, have you, your client, and the board had discussions about what an appropriate resolution of this case might be?
Well, the short answer is no. We weren't aware of any request for any sort of a consent order. And again, the specific allegations were ones that we had responded to. And in our view, demonstrated there was no merit to them. He never represented. And we gave the board examples of the materials that were presented for the selection of this firm. Nothing identifies Brian Robichaux as a licensed architect.
Okay. You did say, though, that he admitted involuntarily to serving as an architect member on a CMAR panel, didn't he?
Well, again, that goes to the statute. The statute says, and this is an oddity that we found in reading the statute. It says the committee will have something like five members. One is a contractor, one is an architect, and then there's a member
architect
of the
architect or engineer registered with the board.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. And honestly, that's the first time I've read that, too. But we acknowledge that it seems to be inconsistent. The contractor member is not the qualifying party for the licensed contractor. It's just somebody associated with the licensed contractor. So, this is a statute that's unique to our profession. Brian acknowledged that it was not correct for him to serve on the committee.
So involuntary, but he participated, he represented the architecture firm and was the architect member of that panel.
Well, I'm not trying to mince words with you, Dr. Angel, but he was serving on the panel in an individual capacity. He wasn't there as a representative of Hunt Caraway. District needed to have a 5-member committee to review the proposals and rank. And that's how he served. So, again, it was he acknowledged in the consent order that it was not appropriate for him to serve on the committee. He didn't have legal counsel at that time. He was invited to serve, and he served.
I'm worried in that he signed as architect in one of the sheets, and the fact that throughout this whole thing, there's years of him working with schools and doing a lot of other things, and everybody was under the impression that he was an architect. And he spoke to the school district boards and to everybody. They all assumed he was an architect. It seems like there would have been plenty of opportunities, a registered architect, seems like there would have been plenty of opportunities to dispel that misconception. We have a report by Gustin Rosenfeld of what they looked into, and they seem very surprised that that was the case, and that their interpretation is he never attempted to clarify his registration status. Is there anything on that?
Well, I can't comment on a report I haven't seen. So okay. I haven't seen any report from Gus Rosenfeld. They were counsel to the district.
School district.
They were responsible for the bond program. And, I mean, there are lots of issues that came out of that particular school district's procurement program. And if you've been following along in what's been in the papers, there were issues with the superintendent, with the finance director. There's lots of things that got into the press, but they didn't involve Brian Robichaux. And so, again, I go back to what we know to be the accepted practice in this state, which is you don't have to be a licensee to own an architectural firm. You just have to have a licensee as your designated principal. In this case, Brian had a partner that's a licensed architect, and he had other licensees as principal architects that were responsible for actually performing the work. There are many occasions where somebody who's not licensed, I'm thinking in a residential setting where you can be a residential designer and not licensed, and this board's seen many complaints over the years where somebody's name shows up in a newspaper article identified as an architect. They didn't write the article. They didn't represent that they were an architect. But now people are saying, well, I felt misled. It presents a situation where I don't know what else you can say. He was lawfully engaging in a business. He was complying fully with the board statute. The firm always had a firm card that identified who the registrants were, and by the same token, did not identify Brian as a registrant. So I have to ask Gus Rosenfeld, why wouldn't they look up the firm card for this firm on the board's website? They had all the information there, and I don't understand their surprise at not knowing Brian's status if that public information is available.
So, sir, I find it very disingenuous that Brian Robichaux would not have known that you needed to be a registered architect. I moved here 6 months ago, or 6 years ago. It took me about 2 months to figure out that you need to be a registered architect to sit on a public school CMAR selection committee. That just,
their website says
it's
there
very
is
upsetting to me that that he interrupted the public's trust in this whole selection committee process. And what he has done with Scottsdale has just boiled over into our entire industry. And I just cannot imagine that you would work in this business for 10 or 15 years and not know that out of 5 people, you're clearly the one from the architecture firm. Like, at some point, don't you raise your hand and be like, hey, I don't see another architect here. What's up with that? I mean, it boggles my mind that he could sit on numerous selection committees and not once raise his hand and be like, hey, guys, you know I'm not registered, right? And it's...
What's the purpose of those committees? I just honestly don't know.
So when the state moved from, like, a hard bid situation for public schools into an alternative delivery method like CMAR, The CMARs are now selected on a qualities-based qualification. It's kind of like an architect or a professional service.
Yeah, it's like
service,
a professional right? service.
And so in order to safeguard the public's money, is my understanding, they bring on a registered architect and a contractor with a contracting license. So a lot of the school districts I work with now check both of those before they'll let you sit on a committee and have you sign a piece of paper that says, I am a registered architect. But 6 years ago, I worked for a non-registrant who owned a firm with a registrant in the office, and he never went to the selection committee, never. He always sent a registrant in his office. And I think it's steering millions and millions of dollars. And I feel like this Scottsdale situation, and unfortunately your client as part of it, has really hurt the public's perception of both CMAR and of what architects in our industry do, and how above board, hopefully, most of us are, in being really transparent with these selection committees. And I feel it's been very detrimental to the public's perception, at least, of what goes on in steering public funds.
So does the committee member, the architectural committee member, and does he engage in the practice of architecture on this committee, or is he like a public member where he's just there in the interest of the public?
He is bringing the expertise of a registered architect to the best selection of a qualified CMAR.
To judge who's most qualified.
Just like a contractor does. So the legislature wrote in that you need to have an architect and a contractor on the selection committee to try to give a certain level of expertise to, let's say, a school business manager who's never done a school before, right? Never done construction before. So I can't speculate on what the legislature wanted to do, except that they specifically said you will have these two positions on your selection committee.
And it'll be a licensed architect, is that correct?
Yeah.
Or engineer.
Yeah, and so I do know that, yes, you can have a non-registrant run a firm, and when I worked for that, a different person, not this company, it was really clear he was not touching the CMAR selection because he wasn't going to disrupt that public process. And I think there's a lot of trust. There's a lot of trust when there's millions and millions of dollars at stake, and you're choosing a company to hand those millions to. And I think when you walk into a group of five and don't raise your hand and say, hey guys, by the way, I'm not registered, that implies that you're representing the firm. I mean, they invited you because the firm is involved in the school design and they want your expertise.
And I get that and I understand that, but like you said, it implies. I mean, strictly for the law, if he would have signed a paper saying I'm a registered architect,
he did
sign
in
not.
For one thing as an architect and the others as president.
Yeah,
right?
President of the firm, but one of them he signed as architect. The website is also ironic. It says that Hunt Garraway is a trusted architect for your CMAR needs.
Right, but that's the firm. I mean, it's not
I understand that.
So,
he signed his name as an architect.
Well, my point is that the firm should have known, if they have done a lot of CMAR and they're a trusted firm for CMAR, they should know that he should not be their representative on
this
that
was,
committee.
Well, and you know what? That's a business decision on their part. I'm just strictly speaking, by the laws. Not saying you're not an architect does not imply that you're not an architect.
If you write architect on a sign-in, you're implying you're an architect. In a situation that legally requires a registered architect.
And maybe let me take it beyond that, because I think whether he calls himself an architect or not is a red herring. I think Mr. Robichaud was actually practicing architecture, is what I take out of this case, for a variety of reasons. One, I mean, his contention is that he was the president of the firm and was serving in that business development capacity, but not a technical capacity. But then I go to, we've got articles from the paper, like page 2022 of our packet, where he gives an interview speaking for the school. Says this was actually two parcels of land, and I needed to combine the parcels. In the survey, along the back of the property, there was a fence that divides the school playground area. We thought it was an easement, but it isn't. The school district owns that property. He says he utilized extra square footage to provide additional play area, to give additional room between buildings and parking area. Site needs old new power, electrical, and gas infrastructure. It seems to me like all those statements to judge whether you need new infrastructure, to know whether they're separate parcels, is something that requires the technical knowledge and skill of a registered architect. So he's telling the public clearly that he, or he's representing himself as doing it or is doing the work, one or the other. Then we have instances where he went to public meetings with the school board, and this is not Scottsdale, this is the school district prior to that, Hickley Unified School District, where he said, Mr. Robichaud explained the construction process. Mr. Robichaud explained fire lanes must be provided to give access to fire trucks through the property. He plans to provide a shade analysis of the property showing shade that is naturally provided throughout the year. I mean, he went with someone else to that meeting. He went by himself to another meeting. It says, District Architect Brian Robichaud from Hunt Careway presented slides of the proposed two-story design in the Bridges subdivision. He designed 11 acres for a new school with capacity of 1,000 students. He explained the benefits of this type of construction, explained the layout of the student union building. I mean, there's more. There's several instances where he clearly practiced architecture or held himself to be a registered architect. It seems pretty clear to me, Mr. Falk, and this is also a public works project, which requires a registered architect to be in charge. So by going to public meetings, by talking to the paper, you only do that if you're in charge. And to be in charge of a public works project, you need to be a registrant. Does that make sense, or where's the fault in my logic?
Well, Dr. Angel, I never doubt your preparation and your careful study of these things, but you're reading back to me words that other people wrote, not Brian Robichaud. And for somebody in the newspaper to quote Mr. Robichaud talking about planning and utilities, I'm thinking, well, gosh, we have planners out there. They're not licensees. We have utility consultants. They're not licensees. They advise. We have construction manager advisors. Many of those people aren't even licensed as architects or contractors. And they provide a valuable service. Where I would beg to differ with your logic is that we have a system here that says that unlicensed persons can own architectural firms. And we know that that happens. There are other fine firms that serve school districts in this state that are owned by unlicensed persons, and you probably know who they are.
I know a few of them, yeah.
And they comply fully with the law because they have a licensee. When we responded, and again, I would also want to draw your attention back to this original anonymous complaint, because that's all that's really before the board. We didn't get into all these other things until the Attorney General filed his complaint, and you know, I don't presume to speak for Mr. Kramer or for the Attorney General's office, but we were told that the board was asked to put an informal hold on this matter until the AG's action was suspended.
I understand. And I think,
well, and we said, fine, you know, we want everything to be considered. If Mr. Robichaud wanted to be perhaps not cooperative with the board, we could have said, no, we've responded, either drop it or go to a hearing. But we've waited now for over a year. We've resolved the other action. We've provided you with that information. So I would be very careful in trying to read things into what other people are saying. In this case, we've given you all of their materials that explain the firm and what they're about. They do have experience designing schools. That's what Hunt Caraway does. Tamara Caraway, the partner who is in responsible charge of this project, the Houghton project for Scottsdale, has over 35 years of experience. Her name appears
on the drawings. Sorry to interrupt you, but if she is in responsible charge and is so experienced with schools, which have so many CMRs, why did she not let Mr. Robichaud know that he should not sit on that panel?
I can't answer that.
Okay.
I don't know. And all I can say is it's been related to me that the school district was the one that asked Mr. Robichaud to serve on the committee. He was not advised by council at the time, and he didn't know that that was incorrect.
Right. But so he either wasn't responsible charge of decided by himself.
I'm sorry?
He either wasn't responsible charge to make the decision himself to participate in the panel, or he wasn't and would have gone to Tamara Caraway to ask her if it was okay for him to send the panel. And she presumably would have told him that that wasn't okay because he wasn't a registered architect. So either they don't know things as well as they think they do, or he was in responsible charge, or she failed to let him know the constraints. And I think what we have in terms of character for Mr. Robichaud, and we've seen Mr. Robichaud here at the board before as well, for failure to pay collaborating professionals and stating that when Ms. Caraway asked him if they had been paid, he stated it had been paid when in fact it hadn't been. So we have reason to doubt his statements. So I don't know, how can we say that school meeting minutes are just what hearsay and what other people are saying? That seems like reaching a little bit. Because those are public minutes. The paper, I mean, it doesn't quote him as managing a business. It quotes him as making the design decisions.
He's identified as president in the profile of the firm that was provided to this board.
Understood. That's what he identified himself as. That's why I'm saying that what he calls himself is probably not as relevant as what he did. I think he was, when he talked to the paper and said those things, when he talked to the school board and said those things, he's actually practicing architecture. And I'm actually, there was a recent case in Oregon, I'm sure you're aware of it, with Charlestrom or whatever it is, a gentleman who had an engineering degree but had no registration, and the court found against the board because they said he was free to speak as call himself an engineer and speak his mind what he wanted to, but the constraint the board placed was plaintiff may study, comment publicly about all these things as long as they occur outside the context of an employment or contractual relationship with a governmental or other entity in charge of these issues. So when he can say whatever he wants, but when it's in the context of a contract and he's practicing where he shouldn't be, that's a problem, I think.
Well, again, Dr. Angel, you're asking me to account for things that we don't have any direct evidence of, and there's a lot of assumptions going on here. If you step back and think about what somebody with an architecture degree can do, that person can act as a draftsperson for an architectural firm. They can prepare a complete set of documents for the firm as long as those documents are reviewed and sealed by a registrant. So Brian Robichaud has a degree in architecture. If he had participated in the design of this project, let's just say, to follow your analogy here, he had prepared a complete set of drawings. If those drawings are reviewed and sealed by Tamara Caraway or the other licensed architect by the firm's in full compliance with the law because he's a bona fide employee of that firm. So I think where the logic of your statements tends to fall away is to suggest that he should not have any role or say anything simply because he's not licensed. And again, that runs counter to what I've explained earlier in terms of what the statute allows. It was very active in their business, no question about it. And he demonstrated he had knowledge and reason to be active in the business. But this board has not presented us with any professional documents, any letters representing professional opinions, any statement in which, or anything authored by Brian Robichaud in which he used the term registered or licensed architect or words to that effect. There's nothing here in which the board can show us that Brian personally has put his name on something representing that he's an architect. So,
other than the CMR sign-in sheet where he says architect, in a situation that requires a registered architect. So I'm
so
kind of stuck
that
on
instance.
That. He wrote architect, it required a registered architect. It seems like that's at least one case where it's in writing, and in front of us, and has either led his client astray in thinking he was an architect or representing himself to the public in a way that makes them think he's an architect. I mean, it seems like that's the one written instance I...
Well, and I'll say the last thing, then I'll shut up, but the cases I alluded to, the newspaper article, the minutes from the Higley School District, those were all in the original ledger documents that I assume have been sent to you guys. So I don't think it's anything new. And when the minutes say he's the district architect, he goes to a meeting by himself and makes representations of the design to the school board. That's you're not the draftsman or the designer working behind the scenes and go to those meetings and make those representations. If you're making commitments in front of a school board or design changes that you're agreeing to, you need to be in responsible charge. So I think, I don't see how he's not practicing architecture, Mr. Folk. So my ask of you would be that maybe you and your client evaluate whether your response is still to deny all the charges, or if you are willing to enter into some sort of consent agreement. Because otherwise, I don't know about the rest of the board, but personally, I would not be inclined to dismiss this case.
Oh, I appreciate that, Dr. Angel, and I always highly respect your opinions on these things because you are so careful, you are so compliant with law, and you are so logical, so I appreciate that. Just to respond to your last point, I'm not aware, and perhaps I've missed this, I'm not aware of any presentation made on behalf of Hunt Caraway concerning a Hunt Caraway project where one of the project architects was not there as part of the team, and that would have been Tamara Caraway or the other gentleman whose name I don't currently recall, but I can provide the board with that name. There were at least two licensed architects. Three, if you count David Hunt, who was the designated principal when Brian bought the firm from him. As I said before, Mr. Robichaud is not doing anything currently. He's just receiving medical treatment. He's retired. He's living out of state. I came here today in hopes that we could get this matter resolved in some way anyway. Because I have a sick client and once it's over. So I can certainly recommend an assurance of discontinuance if that would respond to the direct allegations here. But he has no intention, and never has, of making people think that he's a licensed architect. So rather than try and do it on the spot, if the board's pleasure would be to direct staff to draft a consent agreement. We'll look at it and do our best to get things resolved.
I would not want to dismiss all the allegations myself. I think there's definitely a couple in here that deserve some closure.
Question,
I'm
Chair?
Sorry, I couldn't hear Ms. Wood.
I think there are definitely a couple points here that Dr. Angel and I have brought up that deserve some closure in some sense. So I would not be inclined to dismiss. I would like to see if there is a consent. I understand Mr. Robichaud is not practicing. I totally get it. Tammy's moved on too with her life. So we definitely want closure, but I just feel like this was pretty egregious to our industry and to the public trust, and so I'd like to have some sort of consent come out of it.
Yeah, personally, I don't see it that way. I mean, that would be for dismiss, but if it was something like assurance of discontinuance, I'd be fine with that too. He's obviously not going to be a threat to the public, you know, and no one's going to, you know, this is going on.
He has already been, though, Jason. I mean, it's like you commit a crime and then you say, I'll never do it again, and that doesn't matter?
No, well, I don't think this could. Like I said, my first thought on this is dismissal. Because based on what it is, I mean, I know you said with the newspaper articles and things like that, I don't believe anything in the paper, so it doesn't, you
know. 4 minutes?
So,
four
even
minutes
school
he could have.
How do you, who makes up those quotes? If he didn't say it, who said that?
Well, he might have said it, but, you know, sometimes things are taken out of context and things like that, so, I mean, I don't see anything where he, you know, except for the one sign-in sheet where he put architect, you know, but he didn't put licensed architect, he put registered architect. You know, he's not doing design. I mean, I can't, you know, things with the paper saying, oh, well, we moved some plot lines around, or I moved some plot lines around, or found some extra things. I don't consider that the practice of architecture. I consider that someone giving a talk about something that, and he referred to as I, but it obviously was the firm. I mean, he's not a sole practitioner. I mean, he's part of the firm. He might be representing himself as I, but it's I as the firm. So, I mean, the way I look at this, I mean, do I think he was, probably not the most, honest person with some of this stuff? Potentially, do I think he broke the law and put himself out there as a registered architect? No. My personal opinion is dismissal on this, but that's just mine. But to your concerns, if it was an assurance discontinuance, I'd be fine for that.
Jack, you had something you wanted to add?
Mr. Polk, you said earlier you had not seen the report prepared by Gustin Rosenfeld. That's public information now. Can he get that?
What is your report?
Well, they're asking if there's any information that the respondent doesn't have that we have in our packet.
I'm not sure that the respondent has everything in the packet since the case hasn't been forwarded to formal hearing.
Right. And
we haven't had an EAC or any of those disclosures, so I'm not sure that we've disclosed any investigative info at this point.
Right. I appreciate your concern, and again, I want to be real clear. We took a lot of time to respond to that original anonymous complaint in an effort to be totally above board and transparent with this board, and we've received nothing after that. And I'm not saying that to be critical. Mr. Kramer's always taken my calls. He's always given me an update on where the board's at. But we understood that this matter was simply put on hold for some period of time. I read the paper too. I understand that Scottsdale Unified School District has made changes in their program, but they're dealing with people in the district that are unhappy about a lot of things, and none of that relates to Brian Robichaud directly. So I am speaking up for my client in saying I can't take responsibility and Brian doesn't take responsibility for what other people may have done, but I would ask this board not to have its judgment colored by everything else that's out there. I don't know what Best Rosenfeld found in their investigation. If there's something that concerns Brian or would be a factor in this board's determination, I'm happy to review it and talk to him about it. If he has more information, we'll share it. But he asked me to try and get this matter resolved today because it's just one more thing that's wearing on him at a time when his health is very important.
Well, I thought that report was very informative, and it certainly influenced my opinion what's going on here. So I guess I'm surprised you don't have access to that yet.
Well, no, because I don't represent Hunt Caraway. I haven't had anything to do with the board other than they were a co-defendant in the Attorney General's action, which related to procurement issues and how the procurement was handled. And so our interaction with the Attorney General's office was in the negotiation of a consent order, that which you now have. So there was no processing of that litigation in the sense that there was no discovery, no depositions taken. I never talked to anybody else. We just said, okay, we understand your point when we read the statute and understood that Brian should not have served on that committee. We started talks to have a consent judgment negotiated and concluded.
Thank you.
So, if there are questions, it's my job to see what I can do to answer.
Any further discussion or motions or options or ideas?
Chair, I don't think we're ready for a motion, but I would like to instruct staff to negotiate a settlement on this case. I will also say I'm personally not inclined to settle for just an assurance of discontinuance. These are much more serious violations than just a mere assurance of discontinuance. So that's I don't know how the rest of the board feel, but that would be my input to staff.
I agree with Dr. Angel.
And I would ask that all the materials be made available to the respondent, please. Even though a lot of these things are on the original complaint, also see if we can get copies, audio copies of the meeting minutes from the school board minutes.
If they have
school
them.
Board meetings. If they're available, because I think it'd be informative to see what Mr. Robichaud actually said.
Any further comments or actions? Mr. Pope, do you have anything to add?
No, I'm here to help. Mr. Cruz, I appreciate the board's time this morning. As always, you've given careful consideration to the matter, and my only regret is my client was not healthy enough to be here with us today, or he would have answered his questions directly. I know that's his wish.
Thank you, Mr. Pope.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so we've got another call-in item, which is 6D1. So let's go on to that. Kurt, why don't you cue up Laszlo Cantor, and we will move to 6D1.
This is Kurt Winter at the Arizona Board of Technical Registration here at our board meeting. Are you available to speak with the board?
Yes, I am.
Okay, very good, sir. You're at the meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Cantor. This is Jason Poos. I'm the chairman of the board, and we are here to discuss case number HI-19041. The complaint is alleging that the respondent failed to identify a report on a water leak in the master bedroom. Failed to report on a leak in a bedroom window, failed to report on adverse condition of stucco on the west side of the home, failed to report the absence of a fireplace door, failed to report the exterior outlet on the patio was not GFI, and the investigative conclusions were that the respondent violated ARS 32128C4 as it relates to Administrative Code R430301.01, in that the respondent failed to conduct a home inspection in accordance with the standards of practice for Arizona home inspectors. The staff recommendation is a letter of reprimand, administrative penalty in the amount of $450, and the cost of investigation of $466. And this would be your opportunity, sir, to speak to the board.
Oh, hello. Well, good afternoon, first of all. So far, so good. I've been working on my report and going through the checklist and fixing things. The last thing I'm trying to get through is trying to find an atom, like a kind of a simple system on the computer to have my date on my agreement, if for the ones I attend online, not the ones in person. But other than that, I've been moving forward with all the other report changes. Not completely done, but almost. Just fine-tuning all my adjustments there.
Okay.
Good. Thank you.
So we do have a signed consent agreement in front of us. Does anybody care to make a motion on that or ask any questions?
I'd like to ask a question to Mr. Cantor. Mr. Cantor, you already paid for repairs for the ledger?
Yes. So that was already settled.
How much did you spend?
He said, I believe it was either 400 and then maybe a little bit of materials, maybe like another 100. And I do have receipts, and I believe I emailed a copy to your secretary.
My point is, I think our agreement is sort of excessive. I mean, he tried to make amends. And if you look at it, this is not what the complaint came in about, a lot of it. Really, all he did is he had reporting violations, and he missed the GFI. He didn't know how to inspect GFI outlets. I mean, if the expedient thing is to approve it, I'd approve it, but if the board would consider just removing the civil penalty from it, I think, in consideration to already pay for repairs, I would do that.
Make a motion.
So I would make a motion that we reject the consent agreement as proposed, and that we reoffer an agreement removing the civil penalty to Mr. Cantor.
Still going to keep the reprimand letter?
And keep all the other elements of the original consent. Just no administrative penalty.
Okay, thank you.
I'll second that.
Yeah. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Does anybody care to discuss it? Hearing nothing, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Thank you, Mr. Cantor, and I believe we'll send an amended agreement to him. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
I do have one more question. I sent checks already, not knowing I needed a reply before the total amount. I never got those back in the mail. Do you guys currently have them, or do I need to send other ones?
Just give me a call, and we'll figure it out.
Yeah, just call staff, and they can discuss that with you.
Okay, I'll take care of that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Cantor.
Thank you, and have a good day.
You too.
Thank you.
Okay, so that's all of my call-ins, all of my sign-ins. We had a 6D3, but we went through that.
64, I think.
I have 64 as well, so we'll move on to 64. And 64 is case number AL20-003. The respondent is Paul Skaggs. He's an alarm agent. The complaint is the Department of Public Safety shows that the respondent was arrested or fingerprinted for misdemeanor animal inflict physical injury on or about July 11th, 2019. The arresting agency was Chandler Police Department on July 12th. The respondent's level 1 fingerprint clearance card was suspended. Investigative conclusion is that the respondent violated statute 32122.06b and failed to maintain valid fingerprint clearance card as required in violation of ARS 32128c4. Respondent failed to comply with state and municipal county laws, codes, and ordinances. Regulations pertaining to his area of practice, ARS 32128c4, as it relates to Administrative Code Rule 430-3014. Staff recommendation, accept signed consent agreement encompassing the following order: stayed revocation and indefinite suspension. Obey all laws. So apparently we have that consent agreement signed. That's correct.
Is there a reason why he didn't just do a voluntary surrender as opposed to this stayed revocation and indefinite suspension?
Well, this is kind of a new deal. So the law requires that these alarm agents get a fingerprint clearance card to be lost.
Right.
So there is no provision in the law that tells us what to do once that license, that clearance card gets suspended. So we got with Cotty, we decided this is the best route to go to, because he's not convicted of anything.
Right.
It's just his card's been suspended.
Okay.
To protect the public, that we revoke the license, stay it, and suspend him until this matter is resolved. So once he gets his clearance card reinstated, if he does, then we can lift
the suspension,
and the revocation, and go back to work.
So, but you have indefinite suspension. I mean, I was just looking at the thing. I mean, maybe it's written a little different in the consent agreement. I mean, I think it's just kind of...
We can go a max of 3 years. In the meantime, if he doesn't resolve his issue within that three-year time period, then the revocation will be lifted.
It'd be 1998. Spelled it out a little better.
Right, 3 years. Okay. So really, it's a stayed revocation and stayed indefinite suspension, technically, right?
Because well, the suspension is now.
Well, I know. Well, so the suspension now, but what? I guess the thing is, you know, what's to say? I mean, okay, I get if he complies, the revocation goes away, but isn't the stay, isn't the indefinite suspension still technically on there?
Until he recovers his
clearance
card.
Yeah, it says when he gets his clearance card, respondent may file a request to become.
So he'll have again. He'll have to request to be not on suspension.
He'll have to prove to the board that he's good.
Got his card. Okay.
I move we accept the signed consent agenda agreement.
I'll second that, Chair.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Okay.
So, Chair, we have done the six C's, have we?
Six C's.
No, we need to do the six C's.
Okay.
We will move to 6C1, and 6C1 had an additional letter addressed to me that was given to me this morning. Does everybody have that letter from Mr. Aguirre?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, so as you read that, I'll read the complaint. The board opened a complaint alleging that the respondent firm advertised practice of architecture on a website without firm registration with the board. Board records show no indication of respondent firm has ever been registered with the board. It's further alleged that the respondent and the respondent's firm's website advertises and identifies, excuse me, three non-registrants named David Escalante, Ron Yeager, and Elizabeth Shinohara, each as lead architect for responsible firm. The staff recommendations are letter of reprimand, state suspension, probation, administrative penalty in the amount of $1,200, cost of investigation in the amount of $90.
So this is a sole practitioner that just didn't have himself registered as a firm, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Was he registered himself?
Yes.
Yes.
So he's done his yearly renewal, just under his firm.
Right. And his firm was himself. So is he has he registered his firm now?
Yes.
Okay.
So the one thing is, you know, if he had paid his fees annually since 1995, in 24 years, at $50 a year, it's $1,200, coincidentally. But in present value, it's probably much more than what he would be paying now. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. He takes it as a fine, but and it's stated as such. But he actually would still be ahead of what he would have paid if he had been registered and complying all along.
Well, have we had firm registration that long?
Yes.
Have we?
And on our renewals now, it's like bright flashing red letters that...
Yeah.
Are you a firm?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Hurt made it so.
Yeah, I'm fine.
You've been all 90 days, like, crazy flashing
on
site.
That's on the renewal form. We need a letter of reprimand. I mean, that would be the only thing maybe you could take out.
Yeah, it'd be fine taking out the letter of reprimand. And
it's
still...
Just get some product.
I'm sorry he didn't know, but he should have known.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry we didn't remind him more, but it's his responsibility, not ours.
And like you said, over the 20 years or whatever, it's been in the newsletters. It's, you know, it's not.
Yeah.
And ignorance of the law is, you know, not acceptance. So, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I'm fine with taking out a letter of reprimand.
Yeah. He's complying and getting caught up.
Yeah. So I'll make a motion. We offer a consent agreement for case P-19061, state suspension, probation, administrative penalty amount of $1,200 and cost of investigation amount of $90. Not signed within 30 days, formal hearing.
I'll second that one.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes.
And I think when you talk to him about this consent agreement, bring up what Dr. Angel said, that had he paid it like he was supposed to, it would have been a lot more than, you know, what the penalty is. It's, you know, just kind of make that clear to him.
Okay,
we can go on to 6C2. And 6C2 is cases number AL 19008 010 and 019 against Travis Stevens, non-registrant. And this is an alarm case. And the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent alarm business advertised and engaged in alarm business activities without registration with the board. The board staff received a complaint alleging that the respondent business advertised and engaged in alarm business activities without registration. And the board staff received a complaint alleging that the respondent conducted an alarm system sale and installation without an alarm license at Yerba Buena Way, Apartment C in Fountain Hills, Arizona in April of 2019. Okay, and the staff recommendation is a civil penalty of $3,000, cost of investigation $240, and obey the laws.
Okay, I'll make a motion to $3,000, $240, obey all laws, not sign 30 days, formal hearing.
And clean up your correspondence.
What was that?
Clean up your correspondence.
Oh, can I include some of the quotes in the findings of fact?
Yeah, that was quite the spiel.
I'll second the motion, Chair.
Okay, so I'll just read that motion back real quick here. Well, it's civil penalty of $3,000, cost of investigation of $240, of bail laws, if not signed in 30 days, move to formal hearing. Is that correct, Mr. Madison?
Yes, that works.
So there's our motion. And we had a second, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Okay, I believe that concludes our enforcement matters. Does everybody see it that way?
Yes.
Yep, sir.
Okay. Licensing matters, item 7.
Nothing.
Licensing consent agenda, so everybody take a peek at 8A.
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion to cancel registrations and certifications that have been expired for one full year renewal period, for one full renewal period, as noted in 8A1.
Second that one.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
Hearing none. Motion passes.
Sorry, aye.
Motion passes. Item 8A2 is the list of certifications granted by the executive director. Everybody take a peek at that real quick.
Just thank her for it.
And thank our executive director for handling that for us. Okay, any comments on that? Hearing none, I'll move on to 9, policy matters. Review, consideration, and possible action on the following. Purchasing BTR shirts for board members and staff. Melissa, I'm looking at you.
Okay, well, staff wanted to know when we could order more shirts, and so we thought to ask board members if they would like to be included in the order as well. So that's the only reason it's here. Jason is
supporting it.
Yes.
Yep, my one shirt I've had for like 9 years. And no, I don't want another one.
Because how well they
last. It's like a Tide commercial.
Just keep wearing this one for 9 more years.
9 more years. You're getting a lot of new stuff.
I'm just going to wear it till it falls apart. I had to pay for it, so I'm wearing it.
That's right. So what we can do is send the link to whatever organization it is we're using lately, and you can choose the style and the color and the fabric content and whatever else if you want. So we just wanted to make that an option.
Can you put ears on the side of his arm?
Ears?
Yeah, I should have stripes. You're right, I should.
You need a long sleeve.
I should take a Sharpie and just write them on there.
So that's all it's here for.
One rhythm for everything.
Okay.
Okay.
9B.
9B is the big one that's here for your consideration. We actually had an interesting individual come and visit us from the alarm industry and question us about some of our procedures and how we were issuing alarm agent certifications. And what we had done to accommodate the industry and to fit in with our computer program was accept the application fee of
$65 for the alarms.
$65, and then once they had been granted, we wrote to them and said, okay, now you need to pay for your renewal of
$195.
Thank you, Rob. I'm terrible with numbers. And the way we read the statute doesn't really jive with that, although it did work with our process. So we're bringing it back to you to make it right and to just put the whole fee, the $65 plus $195, up front and have the alarm industry pay it that way. We'd initially not done it that way because the bigger firms were paying for applications for their agents, and oftentimes the agents flaked out, never finished the application process, and it was a cost savings for them. But when we looked at the statutes, it doesn't really allow for that. Our statute and rule says, you know, you have a 3-year alarm agent certification when you're granted, not after you renew for 3 years. So I've also talked with the Ombudsman's office about this, and the Ombudsman actually verbally stated to me that they feel it would be a better industry regulated at DPS.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
Yes, but I don't know that they're going to make that recommendation. They may be able to make that recommendation at the legislature. But regardless, I'm hoping you'll vote to allow us to charge the $260 at the time of application, and also for the home inspectors at $175 for a year.
Wait, so if somebody's denied the application, they still have $260?
Yep, they are.
And there's no way to, instead of granting with the approval of the application, to say, your application is approved, now to grant, you need to give us an additional $185 or $195.
Our statute isn't written that way. Our rule isn't written that way, and you know how difficult it has been for us to go to the legislature and get changes passed and go to the governor and get
pushed. But to Alejandro's point, I mean, if they pay the $260 and their application is denied, do we refund the...
No. Because we would have
So we're just going to call it an application fee?
Yep.
$260 application fee?
Yep. Right. And with it, you get 3 years free? Mm-hmm.
And there have been only two denials in the past year. Just FYI. So denial is not a very common.
Right.
We have closed applications, which is more of a concern. However, an alarm agent, if they do provide a clearance card, that's 99% of what they need. So it is very easy for us to get the other information, maybe a driver's license email to us. So we don't close very many applications because all they need is a clearance card. So we could actually reject.
They should know that when they apply, whether
right.
or not they have.
Right. And we, we should actually probably have stronger rejection policies and reject an application without a clearance card now, because they're
right, because they're
going to
pay the money.
Yeah.
Right.
And then that's something that we want to probably make better known. Right. But that's my biggest concern was that. But luckily, an alarm agent is complete. Whereas an engineer, we might have to send it for evaluation, wait for transcripts, wait for council records. So we don't ever really get complete applications. But alarm agent, usually they're done in 2 days anyway.
Yeah, I like that idea. So we just don't accept them unless they're complete.
Unless
exactly.
they're complete. And the other good thing is, by doing the upfront fee, we no longer have to send a correspondence saying, please pay the $195 within the next month. And now that makes them write a second check, that makes us send out another letter, and we have to hold on to their alarm agent card till they pay us, then we mail that out. So logistically, you just,
cost-wise, it saves us a correspondence on 800 applications a year. It saves them writing a different check and mailing it back to us. And it saves the alarm agents and the alarm industry from us sending mail to their alarm agent, and then the corporation has no idea if they received the correspondence or not. There's a lot of confusion in that industry, so this would actually tighten up the alarm industry, in my opinion, as well. So I think there's a lot of positives with it. The only negative is what Dr. Angel brought up with the, oh, you're closing a $260 app instead of a $65.
So. Right.
And there's not going to be any problem with calling it an application fee and jumping it up
no,
so much.
No, that's what it's called in the rule. So it's okay. Called an application fee.
Can
so
we change it without amending the rule? Can we change the application fee from $65 to $260?
Yes, because okay. We don't have that specific fee in the rule.
In rule. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
And we did run it by Scott. He kind of understood the logic, right? he blessed it. It was good. So we're going to send out notice. Put notice on the website, notice to the industry so they know we're doing this, because I'm sure there'll be some, why do you charge us so much up front when you didn't before? So I think
it's
it really does.
Great. You don't have to go back to your boss for checks.
Right. And it eliminates red tape and operational efficiency. I think it's a good way to do it. If we have trouble, we'll come back to you and explain, but I hope we won't. So.
So two quick concerns, Rob. The two rejections you had in the last year, why were they rejected?
Those were actually, the two denials were actually for Mr. Johnson and Mr. DePrima.
So they were extreme extreme cases.
Yeah.
They
weren't denied by,
it wasn't like you couldn't get your fingerprint card or something like that.
Yeah. And we haven't, that's a good question. We haven't had to close a home inspector application in a while because they put in so much effort to get this license that they almost always go through, whether they get rejected through an evaluation or not. They get it done within the timelines, and we really push on the home inspector application, so it shouldn't affect them. It's so I don't think it'll be.
So I look at the term rejected, and I don't think that's a word we should really be using. I like incomplete application. You know,
we deny an application, but we reject a home inspection report. We say it doesn't meet the minimum standards.
Okay, we're looking at alarm businesses, right?
It's both.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So, what's staff going to do to ensure that the application's complete before we take their $260? That would be my concern.
So most of the applications are complete as is, but what we'll do is, I had to call a home inspector yesterday and said, you didn't provide the clearance card, do you want to submit this? So what we'll do more up front, maybe phone calls or communication before we send it back and say, do you have this? If not, we're going to mail this back to you. Because usually we will take an incomplete application. But so I think what we'll do is just change the rejection standards on the applications. And they know what they're looking for on there. It's only four things you look for in an alarm agent, so.
Okay.
Well, shouldn't there have been three people, though? Johnson, Jr.
Oh, yeah, Johnson and Johnson, Jr.
We lumped the two together.
We couldn't tell the difference.
We didn't know.
To cut down on red tape.
Either the judge.
Yeah.
Saved him some money.
Paperwork reduction.
Identity theft is a real thing. Okay. Are we done with...
No, we've got to make a motion, so yeah, I'll make a motion. What's the motion have to be? Make a motion to charge
alarm
agents and home inspectors their increased application fee to cover their application and their first term. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes,
first three-year term.
Correct on the agenda. This is just my note that you're reading.
Okay.
Is that right, Melissa?
Yes, thank you.
You want it that way?
Okay, so we have a motion.
No second that.
And we have a second for Mr. Noel.
Thank you.
And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Item 9C. Want me to take this, Melissa?
Yes, this
okay.
is all you.
I'm in some non-authoritative talks right now with the state of Oregon on their test. We're at a point where we're going to review our surveying tests. I think the last time we did it was 2014, and we didn't take a lot of action at that time. So we're looking at our test. Currently, Oregon's looking at doing their test. I've been invited by my counterpart at the Oregon board to go up to their meeting in November. So I would ask this board to consider approving my expenses to go up there, and I will travel as cheap as I possibly can. Flights are $150 out of Vegas.
Horseback.
You're not driving?
Sleep pretty cheap.
Horseback in a tent.
So that's what I'm asking for here, and I will give a full report on whatever communications we have and the things that we develop. Oregon has a certain type of test, and we have a different type of test, and we're both, I think we're being looked at by the NCEES, or maybe there's a perception by the NCEES that there's some things that we can do cooperatively. So. And I don't know if that's an accurate statement or not. But
so is the plan to have kind of one test that both states do and split the cost of the test administration?
Those are some opportunities we want to look at is can we collaborate and develop a more cost-effective product that serves the needs of both states?
Is there other states that in the western states that could possibly be in on that as well? I mean, Nevada and
I would think so. I see a lot of merit to it. I've taken both tests, and I'll say that they're really diametrically opposed the way that they present the material. So I think what we see is opposite ends of a spectrum. We see a test that tests subjective things in a objective way in Oregon, and then we have our test that's more of a sterilized NCEES pick one of four of these to go. So between the two, I think that there might be something that we can do to come up with a common product, I guess you'd call it, or a testing product that would work for both states.
And isn't this what NCWS was talking about having public surveying lands. Tests with public lands and then the western states? And
yeah, they're revisiting the survey modules, and that's what I was attempting to say a few minutes ago, and I don't think I said it correctly, but they're having large-scale discussions with creating extra modules for surveying testing. So they'll have a core test and then all these ancillary tests to get there. Obviously, with the land surveyors, every state or most states have a requirement for a unique state test.
Right.
But we all work in the public domain, so we're uniquely administering these state tests about the same or similar content, but we're doing it in a unique and an inefficient way because every entity's doing it instead of everybody doing it collaboratively in the PLS.
Come up with one test and split the cost between everybody.
Yeah.
This could be an interim measure until NCES develops the modules, which might take 5 years for all we know.
Right.
Or are you thinking this would be a permanent step or an interim step? We don't know yet.
I don't really know, but again, the state laws say that you have to have a surveying test. So this is kind of outside of the NCEES, other than we're both NCEES members, and we can provide some guidance to the NCEES as to maybe some content with their national testing, too.
Right.
So
that makes sense.
Well, I appreciate your willingness to travel.
Thank you.
Yeah. And all we're approving at this point is you driving out there, right?
Yeah, I was going to hitchhike.
Right.
And a lot of coffee.
That's
good.
I think I can fly for $150 out of Vegas or something. It's very cheap. So, if the board so consents, I will submit a proposal to Melissa.
So moved.
Yeah. Thank you for doing that, Jay.
Sure. Is that going to conflict with ASWAN?
No. Never. Okay, so that's 9C.
Okay.
And thank you, members of the board.
Thank you.
Item 10 is the director's report.
Okay. I don't have much more of an update other than what
Good.
I sent you. So in the interest of brevity, I would just say we need to take pictures of Jack and Amy before you leave. So no sidling out before we get
Good.
Your pictures so you guys can get your badges.
Sidling?
No sidling.
Hedges.
We do have the panic buttons, but they don't work yet. They were here yesterday fishing around.
I think they got them right
there. Oh, they did?
Yeah, right around 450.
So right there is the new link. So I was hoping we would get to wear them today, but no, not yet. But next month. We're only going to have a couple, like... Well, I think we only need one here on the table.
Okay.
But these are wearable, actually.
Yeah, I don't want to wear a pants.
No, you don't have to.
Okay.
I said I wanted
it. I'm like, I squished my badge like 5 times today. I did not want to wear a panic button.
I'm going to make Carlin wear it.
Okay.
Well, for that. Board, I'm just like,
again, they're
I'm
mobile,
out
so.
It's not an eject button.
People are down there, blop, blop, blop. I'm out of here.
No, DPS will come and take you.
That's fine. Then I'll be out of here, won't I?
It was a felony if you.
Okay.
Sorry, I kept threatening. Alejandro was threatening me.
So the lobby updates are now scheduled to be completed with the turnstiles and security in the lobby at the end of November. I just signed away $4,000 to DOA as our portion of what that security renovation will cost. So next month it will look the same, but hopefully at the December meeting you'll have to be scrutinized by security.
Yeah,
so what
was
the getting out of here?
Well, some of it I think is just the state of affairs in government today, and this building has not been what's considered secure forever. So I think we're just coming in line with all the other state agencies who do have locking doors and security and turnstiles and all the rest. And I'm not adverse to that. I don't know if you read my director's report where I report on our former employee who is now facing 8 felony charges.
Yeah.
And, you know, we never know what will happen with disgruntled members of the public, whether they're our former employees or not. And I don't want to wonder on my watch whether I could have done anything more to make us safe.
I don't see how someone can come up here with a weapon and harm us. There is a sign on the door that says you cannot bring a weapon.
Stiff deterrent,
yeah.
Right? So, that was definitely my concern. And it just so happened I asked about security measures at the same time, more or less, that DOA was making plans for this building. So, and this building is still privately owned. So they are working with the building owner to accomplish all of these renovations. So anyway, we did hire a nice woman named Jamie Burleski, who you will see at the front desk. So she started Monday, and she was here briefly watching all that you do. So just say hello.
So she just quit?
We did clear away the other woman. She was here for about 2 weeks, and then she left. But I also, with regard to the issue with Travis, I did send a letter to the Auditor General advising them of how we had made changes to our policy and how we had gotten the approval to take the word cash out of our rules, so hopefully we won't run into that problem again once the rule is approved. I don't have any new information about new board member appointments since writing the director's report. I also did have to report on the number of petitions we may have received from those with criminal convictions. We have not received any inquiries from those with criminal petitions to find out if we would deny their applications. So that is something the governor was interested in. It was part of legislation from not this past session, but the one before. So they are curious about how many criminals.
So the change has helped avoid delays.
I guess you could say that, yeah.
Yeah, nobody's been delayed.
And other than that, I have no other updates. If you have any questions about statistics or anything else, that's all I'll say. Just for JMAD and brevity.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, good.
Okay, we done with the director's report?
Yes.
Okay, director's meetings? That was possible new board members rulemaking?
That was all part of the report.
Okay. And then National Council news?
Oh.
Mr. Marley is now the West Carb president?
Yes, and I met with Ed last week at lunch. He's very busy and wanted me to. Unfortunately, Neil isn't here, but he is actually super busy. He's designing the Hilton in Tucson that's going to adjoin the convention center, so that should make Neil very happy.
Did you tell Ed that we're not paying this West Carb dues?
Yes, exactly. Now that he's in charge, we're not paying it.
Yeah. I'll be sure to let him know.
Yeah.
He'll be very happy about that. And both Kurt and Jack leave for CLARB tomorrow. You guys have everything you need? You do. Okay, good.
You and submitted that letter. I saw that.
Yes,
yeah,
I did.
Thank you.
And I have a hard copy of it if you want. But okay. And then ASBOG, oh, I've been asked. I'm going. Yes. So we're actually going to have a fairly big contingent. Rob, me, Steve, and Jay Fu, I've been asked to be on a panel. I don't know what to discuss.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it'll be fun. And, you know, Gene's up at ABET right now, so he'll be happy to report on that when he comes next month. And Dr. Angel and I gave a presentation at ASCE. Yeah, it's agendized incorrectly. And that was a lot of fun, arguing over who was going to say what on which PowerPoint slides. And
I didn't argue. You decided what to do.
Oh, it was hysterical. That isn't true. He sent me the slides and said, this is what we're doing. I'm like, well, no, we're going to do it this way. And he went, no, we're going to do it that way. And it went back and forth.
It was Ina Road all over again.
I think it was.
And we actually talked about Ina Road.
Yeah, and he made me admit that in front of the audience at the seminar, which I was happy to do.
Thank you.
Yes. But we had more than six people there, which Alejandro was so funny. He's like, we're only going to have six people at the conference listening to what goes on at the board, but we had more than that. Yeah, so.
Might have been a Baker's Dozen or something.
It might have been. But then I heard from a surveyor who invited me to speak at a podcast they're doing, Kent Grow.
Yeah.
And he heard that we did a great job and wanted a copy of our slides. So, see, it was good we argued about those slides. Yeah. Anyway, I digress. But it was fun.
So the podcast, what is that about?
I don't know yet. It's okay. For the Surveying Association, and they just invited me. I'm sure they'll want to talk about the board and what we're doing.
When is that? Do you know? Is there a date?
It is October, I want to say 15, hold on. October 15, 6 p.m. in Tempe, Tuesday.
Can you send me a link when you get one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. So, modern technology and I are not huge friends yet, but I'll let you know more about the podcast. So that's all I have to say.
Okay. I think you mentioned statistics review already. So, you good with that?
Unless okay. You have some questions. We're pretty much the same. We don't fluctuate that much monthly.
Do you notice, though, the enforcement statistics?
Yes.
Landscape architect, geologist, zero.
Zero. Although, in writing the ASBOG report,
well done,
we did discipline two geologists last year.
And it was for billions of dollars, too. Wasn't that the guy who was, seriously, wasn't he selling claims to some mining that didn't exist?
Yeah, yeah, it was Easter Parkinson. Yeah. And
just go with a bang.
He voluntarily surrendered, and then Mr. Bostic, we revoked.
Yeah,
so
he just disappeared.
I reported that to ASBOG. And the landscape architects behave better. Yeah.
Well done.
Either.
Oh, man.
Okay. Let's move on. Board chairs report. I don't have anything other than the task force down in 14F. So we will pass on item 11. Item 12 is the Assistant Attorney General's report.
And I will keep it pretty brief. Freedom of authority, one in the afternoon. And it's a pretty straightforward topic, actually. I think Patty was the one who initially wanted this on here. Has to do with when the board is going after somebody for unlicensed practice, primarily. You see somebody using the term architect, using the term engineer, and it comes up all the time. We actually addressed this last year at one point, but just a little bit of a refresher. Just be careful when using architect and engineer or other terms like them, because they've really become generic over time. And the courts have started going after boards that penalize somebody for holding out as an architect, where they using the word architect, where they could be an architect, they could be a software architect, they could be there are numerous other areas of use of the word, where if the board looks like it's co-opting the entire term, then they're expanding their regulatory authority. So it's one of those things. It's really mainly going to come up when the board has a case in front of it. I'm going to be jumping on top of that if I hear you guys talking about a case where it really is sort of looking like it's going to go towards regulatory potential overreach. But that's really what this has to do with. Yes, Jason?
Just a quick question, Scott. Sure. When you have somebody that's college educated, for example, an architect or an engineer, but they don't have registration, what is your, if you can opine, what is your opinion on our handling of that?
Can you call?
Depends on what they're doing. Honestly, I mean, it's going to be a very case-by-case situation. This has come up is because there have been boards that, and one of the big cases has to do with the Northwest, with the
Oregon Board.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, and it's, you know, measuring the red lights and, you know, are you an engineer? Are you not an engineer? Are you using the term? What is it you're doing? So this is just more of a you know, sort of a cautionary type of an agenda item. When the board sees an engineer or architect, we need to make sure it's somebody who's actually doing something that we do regulate within that umbrella term. Those are the ones that are going to come up the most often. Again, with architect, it's used all over the place in modern.
Yeah, if somebody had a sales business that's called, you know, whatever, golf course architecture,
yeah.
No issue. But if somebody's doing, you know, yeah.
Right. Or it could be Jim's Architects in Tucson, and you look at it, you look at the page, and it turns out that they are sandwich architects. Yeah. It sounds silly, but there are people that hold out as being sandwich architects.
There was a big case in the Southeast about something tire engineers.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, tire engineers, we don't want to go after them.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, so it's just a cautionary one.
Sandwich architect.
But as long as the facts weren't totally upgraded by business cards.
Sacks, yes, the art of
so
sandwich.
Call themselves
yeah,
an
something
architect.
Like that. Yeah.
Maybe the architects and be in a situation artists. Where, or artists. Doing something mm-hmm. where there's
structural
been
sandwich engineer.
Yeah. Right. Then we're okay.
I'm building
a
spot. You're
yes.
Dagwood.
Yes, and well, let's just be 100% accurate. It just means we need to do a bit of a deeper dig than maybe people would have done in the past, where they saw somebody use the word engineer on their business card. Now we want to look at it and make sure they're not a software engineer. And we want to make sure that they're actually
the
practicing
in his card.
Something we regularly.
Right, okay.
Okay, any further questions or comments on that?
Thank you, Scott.
Yeah, thank you, Scott. 13, standing committee reports. Legislation and rules, no new meeting date. Home Inspector Rules and Standards Committee, November 5th, 2019. Does anybody have anything to comment on that?
Nope.
Okay. We will move on to 14, board member reports, discussion on outside National Council activities, news and meetings. Very quickly, ASBOG is in...
coming up November.
November, as stated. Larb?
I apologize. I just wanted to point out that Patty had asked for this separation of this council news. Now it's under the director's report as to when these meetings would occur. And 14 is now something for more of you guys to discuss what you would like to, because there's always discrepancy where, hey, this is the meeting, but there's nothing else listed there, so we can't discuss it. So now there's going to be a place for you guys to discuss this information beyond when the meeting dates are.
Okay. I mean, I can take it out of my director's report if you guys just want to keep it down here.
So I will phrase it like this. Does anybody have anything to report on outside activities that hasn't been reported in 10D? Hearing none, I think we'll move on. Except for me. I've got a land surveyor task force. Very quickly, we've been working on this task force. We're revisiting the minimum standards and looking at the language that and comparing it to our actual practices. So we've been meeting monthly on the day after the board meetings, and we continue on to go with that. So when we get a final draft, we'll present that to the board, and it'll go through all of the appropriate channels for review.
So are you looking at rules for tools?
I'm sure that'll come up at some
point. I'm just kidding, but I'm more serious about, you know, technology and how it, you know, what's okay and what's not okay.
Yeah, I'm sure the question will come up, but I don't know that that applies in that venue. It may or may not. So whatever we come up with, we'll present to the board, and of course the board can look at it and say, hey, you don't have rules for tools, and we think that's important. So the opportunity will be there for this board to apply whatever they feel they want to apply or is necessary for practice. So that is my report on the Land Surveyor Task Force. Future board meetings, October 22nd, 2019.
I'm going to be flying in Nashville that morning.
For fun?
Kind of.
Yeah.
Business development, but yeah.
Good.
Conference.
Cool.
First time.
I still need your picture.
I'm not leaving from here. I don't need your picture.
I might have a conflict.
I'll be in Nashville at the beginning of that month.
Okay.
Next week.
I've never been.
Okay. Just let us know.
I was when I was a kid, but looking forward to it.
Okay, suggested topics for future meeting agendas. I'd like to defer back to item 6A4. I think that came up earlier, and that was, I can't even remember what it was.
Oh, 2D mapping. In
yeah.
Games, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of an interesting one.
So we'll call that, what, 2D and 3D mapping? Is that a good topic for that?
Okay.
Yeah.
And is that a discussion we want to have now, or do you want to have that in your surveying thing and then talk about it there with a bunch of surveyors and what their thoughts are?
I think it shows up frequently in our discussions, so I don't need to know that we need to formalize any action. It wiggles out naturally with us. So
okay.
Again, I think Alejandro pointed out in this process, or he asked the question and I responded with, in this process the board will have the opportunity to address those things. So
right. But I'm thinking, do we want it on the next agenda, or do we want to wait till you guys discuss it? Or maybe you will discuss it sometime. And I mean,
I'm good with putting
the surveyor's thoughts on it, you know, ahead of time would be kind of helpful.
Well, I think you make a good point. Maybe we should maybe I should solicit some consensus in the industry,
right,
and then bring that forth,
right,
to the board.
If it is on the board, then you can say, hey, here's what the surveying people thought about it, or what their ideas are, or something. I mean, I think I'd like some direction. I mean,
yeah, that's a good idea.
You know, from
yeah, sure.
From you're just community. Hoping you're off the board by then.
I'm hoping. I won't be, but I'm hoping.
Okay, so I'll bring that up at the
yeah, just kind of feel them out, get their thoughts on that stuff.
Okay, so we won't go ahead with that on a definite date, but we'll
right,
have
I think
it on
it's in the future,
day.
But it might be yeah. 3 months
be,
out
yeah.
or whatever.
Yeah.
January or something.
Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. The next item is meeting adjournment, and before we adjourn, I just want to thank Scott for coming down. Scott is our EAC member for engineering, correct, Scott?
Not yet.
For what?
Oh, you're...
He's going to apply.
You're going to apply for an EAC. Okay. Well, thank you for coming to the meeting and putting up with us for several hours.
Very enlightening.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
He is also interested in being a board member.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. That's all I thought.
Cool. Okay.
Because the governor moves like the last time he's going to be on the EAC.
Mr. Madison, you want to make a motion for me? I know you've been dying to. Okay.
Second.
All right. Meeting adjourned at 107. Thank you, everybody.
I'm very much.